You are a chef and a writer. So can you cook up a happy ending in Kitchen Stadium?
You just lick it, suck on it.
I'm sure you would do very well.
Kate Krukowski-Gooding is a noted cookbook author, hunter, and trapper. She and her husband, Don, have been eating beaver for 30 years.
Oh, come smell this.
Oh!
Thank you. I love
it. I'm surprised more people aren't eating beaver.
Just wait till you see what I've got. It's the Wonder Boner.
The Wonder Boner?
Order your Wonder Boner now. Call 1-800-310-3039 and receive the amazing Wonder Boner for just $19.95. The Wonder Boner comes complete with three stainless steel rod tops and two extension rods, and will debone fish up to 3 pounds. The Wonder Boner is the perfect gift for your fishing friends and your favorite chef. In fact, every tackle box and every kitchen should have the Wonder Boner. Call 1-800-310-3039 and order your Wonder Boner for only $19.95. 1-800-310-3039. Call now.
My wife would like that.
I've often said that I don't believe government has the answer to every problem or that it can do all things for all people. We're a nation built on the strength of individual initiative. Buy your own damn fries.
It's time to call it a night.
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
You don't want to go home alone, but your options aren't looking good. You could get hammered to close the deal, but this one's looking pretty rough. Introducing Beer Goggles. Instantly turn an oh no into a hell yes. Beer Goggles by Schmarmco. Our patented reverse skankification technology optically refocuses the textured light, sending false hottie signals to your balls and brain. So give her a whirl. She may have been beaten by the ugly stick, but you'll still be sporting wood. And ladies, we haven't forgotten about you. Introducing Beer Goggles for her. So leave your pride at the bar and take that dog to the car.
Thanks, Beer Goggles.
So what I want to do is lay down on the counter. You're going to need to roll your sleeves up, and this is the fun part. You're going to have to get your hands in here, and I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Be careful of the splatters. Juice, 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 juice. Cocktail time. Cocktail time. Cocktail time. Vanilla vodka. Vodka. This already has vodka in it.
Bill, where the hell are you guys?
I'm freaking out.
Yeah, well, listen, I think I... Yeah, I screwed up your wedding cake.
What are you talking about?
Your wedding cake, it's... Well, it's gone. A hilarious story, actually, although you might not find this funny. I told you I hadn't made one of these before, and things are going really well with it. I decided I would get creative with the cake. As you know, I've got a tendency to get over my head a little bit. So I decided I'd put some marijuana in it, because, you know, we can get it pretty easily out here. Anyway, I made the cake, I frosted it, and it looked great. And actually, I baked a little test cake so I could tell what the cake was going to taste like. And it tasted great. I was really proud of myself. But on the way to deliver the cake to you, I got the munchies really bad. I mean, seriously, like I was about to eat my own shoe. So I decided I would sample the wedding cake.
What?
Yeah, I sampled the cake. And one thing led to another, and well, I ate the whole thing. I'm pretty impressive, actually, if you think about this. I mean, I don't know anyone who's actually ever polished an entire wedding cake by themselves before. I'm pretty proud of myself, to be honest. I even ate the bride and groom ornament on the top. I'm not sure how that's going to turn out later.
What are you saying, Phil? We're getting married in 5 hours.
Yeah, you are. Without a wedding cake.
Jesus H. Christ. When I was a boy, every little squirt wanted to be a harpooner or a sword fisherman. They got here. Portable shower or a monkey cage?
Oh, this? It's a shark cage. Yeah, Quint, listen, I have this feature on my show. It's called Eat It Before It Eats You. And one of my listeners challenged me to enter a shark cage wearing nothing but a meat suit so I could face a shark head on.
You go inside the cage?
Yeah, wearing this meat suit. It's like a wetsuit, only it's made only from ribeye steaks that are sewn together. Pretty cool, actually. Wait a minute. Prada's on the phone.
Cage goes in the water?
Yeah, of course, dude. Quint, that's the point, man.
You go in the water, shark's in the water.
Well, hello. What part of me jumping into shark-infested waters wearing nothing but a meat suit do you not understand, dude?
Farewell and adieu to you, fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston. And so never more shall we see you again.
So I take it you don't think this is a good idea, then.
All right, moving into the food and drink category. Nominees are The Beer Download, Crimes Against Food, Hopcast, My Life as a Foodie, New Brew Thursday, Should I Drink That? The Nutrition Diva, The Scotch Cast, that's my favorite, The Splendid Table, The Wine Library TV. And the winner of the 2010 Food and Drink category is My Life as a Foodie. And the winner of the 2010 Food and Drink category is The Beer Download.
Cheap, lying, no good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
Hey, listen, Frankie, Monster, man, whatever your name is. Hey, I want to thank you for coming down and joining us for dinner, but I think it's time for you to go now. No, listen, you big dumb green bastard. I invited you here out of the kindness of my heart, with your dirty freaking clothes and your big stupid shoes. You drug mud all up in here with those. Now, the sight of you and the stink on you, dude, that wasn't the show killer. No, it's your bad habits, dude. Seriously, you're killing it for my guests here tonight. I made like 6 loaves of fresh bread. You ate every single one of them.
Bread?
Yeah, see? No more bread now, because you ate it all. There's none left for my guests now, you stingy pig. And Jesus, man, listen, I thought I bought plenty of beer for this party. But dude, seriously, I've never seen anybody drink like you.
Drink?
Yeah, drink. See, you drink like an animal. This isn't Should I Drink That, man. We don't chug beers here.
Good. Good.
Yes, it's very good. But now look, there's nothing left, and I still have more people coming. Dude, now what are you doing?
Oh.
Dude, you can't smoke pot in here, man. Man, some of my friends are in law enforcement.
Good. Good.
Are you seriously taking a bong hit right here in my house? Man, get the hell out of here. Go, get the hell out, you sticky green piece of shit. Go.
Like, you know, the thing is, people think to themselves, well, drinking made easy doesn't make any sense. I mean,
right.
I open a beer, I drink it.
Right.
What's so tough about it?
Right.
Well, analyzing it
right.
is a completely different story.
Right. And appreciating it, too.
Sure. Because drinking or alcohol, it's a lot like sex, right? Think about it.
Not if you're doing it right.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. But they don't have a show called Fucking Made Easy.
Okay.
You know? But because anyone can do it. It's pretty easy. Dogs
right.
can do it
That's
without
true.
Even trying.
You're right. You're right. The drinking part is certainly not the difficult part.
Right.
You're right. It's knowing how to be really good in bed or how to
yeah.
know what it is that you're drinking so that you can – I mean, what are you going to do, impress your friends? I mean, it's sort of the problem with drinking is that the more that you know, you run the risk of your standards increasing. I guess it's the same as sex.
Yeah. So you're like the Dr. Ruth of beer.
Yes, thank
See?
You. That's the first.
All right. You know, what do you want from me?
I don't want money and I don't want medals. What I do want is for you to stand there in that faggoty white uniform and extend me some fucking courtesy.
You know, this is what I mean. You government-run organizations think the chips are always stacked in your corner, but we, the people, we've got a say here, and this is the kind of attitude that starts the ball rolling. This is why people are investigating your organization all the time.
You want to investigate me? Roll the dice and take your chances.
Well, maybe I will. We want answers.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
All right. What an intro. Phenomenal.
Fantastic.
Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Don's joining me today at Show 100.
Happy 100, brother.
Thank you very much. It was
yep.
a long road.
I'd say it
Five
was.
5 long years.
Wow.
If you haven't read already or didn't kind of get the gist of all this, this is it for the show. This is it for the audio podcast. I thought 100 was a strong number to go on. I want to continue doing other things. Including video, maybe some other projects that may or may not be food related. I'd love to at some point start doing some more documentaries, even short ones.
That'd be great.
I did Hopped Up at the first year of the show when I went to the GABF, and there were three parts. It was, you know, 25-minute segments. It was messy, but it was still something that got me started, and I really wanted to kind of explore that. May or may not deal with food, but those are other things I want to do. But I do want to do more video. So everything at this point forward will at least be video. I'm not saying I'll never do another podcast. I'm just saying that for now, I think this show has run its course. I don't see – what I don't want to do is what happened with Dude Night, what happens with a lot of other shows where these guys just pod fade, you know, and they stop doing it. And I'll be at a show 107, and all of a sudden it's been 3 months before I put a show out.
Right, right.
Now, I was talking to James Spencer from Basic Brewing Radio about this, and he says, it's a good idea. It sucks. It's sad to see you go. And I know a lot of people are going to be upset, and I'm sorry. But we're not just going to disappear. Out to Lunch will continue, probably with a little more frequency.
Yep.
I'm going to do a cooking show where it's like 4 to 5 minutes where I do voiceover work and I just basically quickly show you how to cook something from a cookbook. And we'd feature a cookbook and it would just be kind of fun, like in the kitchen type of thing. Little things, little videos, like your paella thing, okay?
Okay.
Something like that. Or listen, Don makes the best cup of coffee. He really does. And there's a special
pour over.
It's a pour-over.
Pour-over method,
but you have, what's the equipment that you have?
It's Hario.
Hario.
Yeah, Hario is the manufacturer, Japanese company.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. It makes a really good cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple, but the details, it's cool. And I'd like to feature something like that.
Sure.
Little things, like, you know, how to properly peel an onion. You know, tiny, tiny stuff, but stuff. So right. Everything you would see me do here, or hear me do, I would do on a video. And I fought Katrina tooth and nail on this. It's been 6 months I've been thinking about this. And she was not for it. And then finally when I told her, I said, look, I'm going to hit 100. And it would just be a nice plateau. Every project I've ever done, be it music, DJing, remixing, anything, photography, or photojournalism, it's always had a beginning and an end point. And I think that it's a good time for me to just bow out.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you know it. It's ready to go.
It feels right. It feels
yeah, that's what counts.
It feels right to me. And I know, you know, the biggest thing is that people are going to say, oh, no more Halloween show. Maybe we do a Halloween show, but not My Life as a Foodie. We do something else. Or maybe we go on a haunted tour somewhere.
That'd be good.
That would make sense, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, we're in my kitchen, so it's kind of noisy. That's the ice machine.
I like it.
Yeah. So we're going to drink some beer. We're going to recap the show. We're going to kind of review how it all started and where I feel like it's taken a few turns or stepped it up a notch, and there's been some pivotal moments in the show that I look back on and think, you know, before this happened, I really wasn't that proud. Or, you know, when I started, I didn't know if there were 5 people listening, you know. As it grew, the last show that I did with the Ludo show,
yep. It
was like almost 7,000. At this point, almost 7,000 people have listened to it.
That's fantastic.
Or at least 7,000 downloads.
Wow.
So it's been
wonderful.
A big deal.
Well, I had 10 of them.
You did. Did you listen 10 times? You can't just download it and keep listening. Thanks.
I'm joking.
Thanks for pushing the numbers,
that's
though.
That's right.
Appreciate that.
Fill in the ballot box.
Thank you very much. The Chads.
Yeah, it's okay. All right.
But here's the funny thing. And listen, if you haven't subscribed to our channel on YouTube, please do that because that's where everything's going to be at this point going forward. YouTube has really taken the reins.
It really has.
You know, Food Network started, but YouTube went crazy. And you're big on this. I mean, I show up to Don's house. And he's got, like, you know, his Apple TV, and he's subscribed to all these channels. And you watch more Apple TV than you do regular network television.
Oh, by far. Yeah. I mean, it's pirate television, in my opinion. I mean, you can really watch whatever you want. You can set up your channel so it's easy to navigate and get everything, and your subscriptions and everything makes it simple.
And they can curse, and they can say what they want.
That's right.
Chris Constantino has a show on the Hungry Channel.
Yep, Hunger Channel.
And it's called Pork You.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a great one.
And then my favorite is on the Reserve Channel. Eric Repair has one called On the Table.
Right.
And he recently had Gail Simmons on.
Yeah, he took her on the table for sure.
Did he? Nice.
No,
did they do a little
show.
Drinking?
Yeah, they did. They did. She actually, I after watching that, I gained a lot more respect. I already did respect her. I thought she was pretty classy and a lot of fun. But now I think she's less classy and a lot more fun.
Oh, I love this. I love it. It was funny because he had the one before this, he had Stanley Tucci on.
Right.
And I thought, that's weird to have Stanley Tucci on. But I didn't realize that Stanley Tucci, not only was he in The Big Night, he wrote it, he directed it, and was a producer on the movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, he did great. And what's amazing, I think the closing scene in that movie, kind of after he and his brother had the big fallout,
right,
and he's cooking eggs.
Yes.
And it's just, there's no dialogue.
He's just cooking eggs.
Cracking the eggs, making the eggs, flipping. He did a fantastic job. I mean, you can tell it's him cooking.
Right.
It's like,
well,
he did a beautiful.
The dude can cook.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's funny? That reminds me of, there's a scene in The Sopranos when Artie,
right,
had his hand was burned. He was fighting with one of these other guys that was in the family. And the restaurant was closing. He was closing down the kitchen. And there was this one couple. They were on their first date. And they came late. And they said, you know, they came in and it was raining and they just need to eat something. And he goes, look, the kitchen's closed. They're going to have to eat whatever I serve them. And she goes, that's fine. He had killed a rabbit in his mm-hmm. garden. And pulls it out of the refrigerator and pulls out his grandfather's notebook full of recipes, all written in Italian.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember that? And that he makes this dish. And it was no dialogue. It was just some music and him cooking this rabbit.
Yeah, yeah. And just the music of the kitchen.
And as he's touching the pages with his hand, and I thought, man, this is that's the essence of cooking, right? That's
right.
Why people fall in love with it.
Yeah.
So Stanley Tucci had a really interesting thing to say about Julia Child and food television in general. And I thought it was really poignant. And I wanted to share it.
You know, my mom used to watch Julia Child when I was a kid.
And you were watching too.
I was. I remember I would almost feel like I wanted to cry at the end of each show.
Really?
I know it sounds silly,
but
it wasn't until years later that I realized that it's because she loved what she did so much that it broke your heart.
Yeah.
You know, and I always wanted to do something that I loved that much, you know. Because that's a great way to live your life.
Yes, of course.
Right?
What do you think about food shows on TV?
I think they used to be more inspiring.
With Julia Child?
With Julia Child, yeah. I prefer to see somebody like you just cook basically in real time. Or the way Julia cooked. I really loved Mario's show that he had.
Molto Mario.
Fantastic. Because also he has an encyclopedic knowledge of food.
Yes.
I like the fact that he had people there. He talked to them, but he also really focused on those dishes. There's a kind of a crassness to some of it now. And I think the competitions, some of them are fine, but I think they're a little out of control.
So it's basically, this is about around the time of like today, 7 years ago, Don had approached me, sent me an email, and he was listening to this podcast called The Beer Report. And The Beer Report were these two guys in Illinois. Where'd you find that?
You know, it's funny. I was redoing my kitchen and I wanted something to listen to, and I got really tired of just listening to music. So I got on to iTunes, and I typed in beer, and they came up. Actually, they weren't even the first one to come up. There were a couple of other ones.
Right.
But they sucked so bad that I kept rolling through them, and then I finally got to Groucho and Chud's show, The Beer Report. And I was like, man, this is pretty good.
There still is a lot of shitty podcasts.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's amazing with the kind of the onset of better quality of the production materials,
right,
mics, mixers, just inboard on computers,
right,
that are out there. You don't have to have a very sophisticated setup.
Not really.
Nor is it really difficult to do it to get damn good audio.
It's the audio. That's one thing. I mean, too many guys concentrate on their equipment and mm-hmm. don't concentrate on their content. And that's the one thing I never wanted to do, especially here, is be boring.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be entertaining.
Right. And those guys, when I found them, they were really entertaining.
They were entertaining.
Yeah. I think I knocked through a half a dozen shows.
Well, he sends me a link to it and he goes, I want to do something like this. Would you be interested? And I'm like, well, hell yeah. I've always wanted to be an entertainer. I'm a narcissist. And when I grew up, I wanted to be a DJ. We had Wolfman Jack. They syndicated Soupy Sales, I think, mm-hmm. on Saturdays. And then, you know, we would have morning drive time here. We had, like, the morning zoos, like Rick D's show.
Yep.
We had Mark and Brian.
Right.
We had, later, I guess, we had Kevin and Bean mm-hmm. on K-Rock. And then Howard Stern came. And all of these shows, especially Howard Stern, I'm like, oh, man, I would just love to be able to sit there for an hour a day and just talk. Because that's all I do. I talk. We get on the bike, I talk. I can't stop talking.
Well, if I pedal fast enough,
you have to stop talking.
You start talking.
Like, that's your way of telling me to shut the hell up. Yeah. So he sends me a link, and I listen to him, and they were very funny. And here's the deal. It was two guys, two brothers, who Groucho and Chud, who sit and talk to each other. And they get together maybe once or twice a month. They sit down and have some beers. They record it. And they just break balls, tell stories and stuff.
Yep.
And that is something guys love to do.
Right.
You ask guys, two things that would make guys happy. Number one, sex, of course. Two, hanging out with your friends and just hanging out. to listen to guys sitting down and hanging out, if they're funny enough,
right?
You know, a couple curse words, drinking some beer, making stupid, you know, statements. It's brilliant. It's highly entertaining for men. As long as you're not boring, and they were not boring.
No, And I didn't even know they were brothers until later on.
No, and I had a ton of stuff. Yeah. I had all this gear from you know, my musician stuff, and I had a mixer. The mixer was old piece of shit. The thing was so scratchy.
You that was like funny.
Remember the volume pods? You'd pull them back up and down, and they'd be scratchy.
Right.
So you'd have to have them set just so before you started recording. Beer had been spilled on it, gigs and everything else, and the. Our recording gear was so crap.
Bad. Well, remember I think one of our mic stands was actually a beer bottle.
Beer bottle. Another mic stand was, this was Gonzo. Gonzo had one of those gardening buckets filled with stones, so we'd hold it down, and then we duct taped his microphone to it. And you guys had gone to like either Radio Shack or Target or someplace to get these microphones. Mine was so fucking cheap. You can believe what I did. I actually had a pair of earphones that I had plugged into the microphone jack and was talking into the earphones. That was my mic.
Yeah.
And then you got some gear for work or something like that, and we started using that.
Yeah, to kind of upgrade a little bit.
Upgraded
a little better.
A lot. So Don says, do you think we can do this? And I said, yeah. So I contacted Groucho and told him what our idea was. We're just going to be, you know, three guys who hung out. We know what we were going to call it Food Fight.
That's right.
That was the name of it.
Uh-huh.
And we did this actually on the show. We would pit two types of food together. Like, we ordered Pizza Hut and Domino's Pizza.
Yep.
And we were going to rate them based on how quickly it got there, the price, the ease of ordering it.
Right.
And of course the taste, and then we did a chicken. We did
wings,
chicken
too.
Wings too, and it was horrible.
Right? Yeah, they were terrible.
And I'm glad we didn't do that because we would have to stick to that every time. And that was the thing. I got stuck with this, and I'm thinking, well, I'm only going to talk about food. Well, that's going to be kind of tough,
right?
But maybe it won't be. Maybe if I spin it a certain way, and you know, we make it a little more interesting, then we don't have to worry about it. The deal was we were going to get together at each other's house, and we would go in a circle. We'd go to Gonzo's place first, then Don's, then mine. We'd record three shows. We'd release the first one immediately. 2 weeks later, we'd release another one, and then 2 weeks later, another one. Then we get together again. So we get together once a month.
And we'd then record three.
We'd always have something in the can.
Right. But that third one in the can was usually a little short.
Because we were drunk.
I know.
We were drinking so much.
Barely see the mics.
Man, we drank a lot of beer.
Good beer, too.
Yeah, always good beer.
Yeah.
So December 28th, 2005.
That's right.
We finally did. It was the night of the Alamo Bowl. Nebraska upset in Michigan. You remember that?
I remember.
We were toasted drunk. We drank so much beer. And literally, I had outlined three different things. And that was the other thing. I always like playing games. You know, I like making up these games we could play. And so on the first night we did this, I brought this little game thing with us. And people love this clip.
The shocker.
The shocker game. And it was quite jolting the first time you got it because you didn't know what to expect. I felt like you were being electrocuted.
Right, right.
But
you were.
And Gonzo was not overreacting. He really was getting shocked.
Exactly.
So why don't you put that down? And I got a little game for you to try here.
Oh, no.
Come on. You'll love it.
I see.
You'll love it. Now put
this
that thing
is scary.
Put that thing away because
that looks scary.
This is some serious shit.
This okay. Let me put this bottle down here because it's very special to me.
A buddy of mine is a buyer for a lot of different places. He used to be a buyer for the Broadway. I don't know if
we
you guys know what
to take a picture of this because that looks like a device for a porn movie.
It looks like an alien. So he came across this game called Extreme Shock. And basically what it is, it's a battery powered game that you turn on, and every member you can play up to four players can hold this little handle that has a button on top. And you hold it in your hand, and you press this middle button, and this little button will play a song. And when the song ends, you have to press in. Well, the first person to press in wins. Everyone else gets a shock up their arm.
Dude, this is like so much James Bond. Remember that one James Bond with where Kim Basinger was in it? I don't want to bore you.
I don't know where you're going with this, but I want you to hold on to these two, and we're going to fuck this game. We're just going to press this button, and you're going to get a good shock.
There's three of us, but there's only
this is
four
fucking
little,
great.
Little doohickeys here. What am I supposed to do?
Here it goes.
Don, you should hand that.
Yeah, fuck
okay,
you.
What do you mean hold and run around? Excuse me.
Okay, Gonzo's going to hold on. I'm going to put it on low.
Hey, what
okay,
do you mean?
Low. Press the button down there, Gonzo. You ready?
Yeah.
I want to see it on like Light Whoville.
Wait a minute. We also play. Why am I?
Well, we're all gonna play,
only
but you're gonna go first. Okay, you ready? I'm gonna press the button, and he's gonna get a jolt. Ready? Here we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Dude, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Dude. dude, that's nothing to you, Brokeback Mountain bitch. Put that back in your hand.
Come no. here, bitch. Hold on.
Put that back in your hand, dude.
This is like Nazi Germany. Stop it.
Hold it down. Hold it down. I could call this Iraqi prisoner.
Oh, what's Ready? Going on?
Hold on, hold
what's
on.
The purpose of, what's the purpose of the game?
To get shocked, you homo.
No! Oh, my God.
Fuck, how cool is that shit? Dude, I don't even have this fucker on high
You're
yet.
You're such an asshole, dude. You do it.
Yeah, I'll do it. What's this shit?
Yeah.
No, here, you
give
me that
no,
fucking
give it
thing.
To D. Yeah, give it button. To D.
Oh, fuck off, dude. I'll put two in my hand. Whoa. And I'll put one on my dick, too. I don't give a shit.
Oh, man, there was no edit button back then, dude.
None, not at all.
We didn't care what we said.
Uh-huh. Well, we didn't were think so drunk, we didn't realize.
And we didn't think anyone was going to listen anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, we thought it was only going to be us.
For a while, I thought it was just our excuse to get away.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's
it was a great one.
It was a night just to do whatever we wanted and behave badly.
Right. Yeah. It's like, honey,
gonna hang out with the guys.
We're going to go hang out with the guys. We're going to record. We're going to be drinking beer.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're only doing this once a month.
Yes, once a month. That's all I need. I need a hall pass once a month.
Yeah.
It got crazy, and I think we got through half of the second year, and then it just started to die. And I knew when it was going to die, and I kind of talked to Don, and I said, look, I said, I'm really enjoying podcasting. We've only been doing it for, you know, like a year.
Right.
I want to do some more, and I couldn't do Dude Night by myself.
No.
Because that would be pathetic.
Yeah.
You know, lonely dude night. You
right.
know, one guy in a room talking to himself. So I said, you know, I'm going to do some kind of a food show. So Don had a good idea. He said, listen, why don't you do this? Why don't we take a video recorder and go into these different eateries and we'll call it counterculture. And I thought, that's a great idea. And you know what? Counterculture, that's actually what Out to Lunch is now.
Exactly.
Basically, that idea is what we're doing it and we're doing it with voiceovers and stuff. Anyway, that didn't happen because we just couldn't get our shit together. So I told Katrina, I said, look, I really want a podcast. She said, look, she goes, buy some gear, think about what you want to do, and do it. So I did. So I wanted to do a food podcast. I put together like 10 names. I sent 10 names to her, and I said, pick one of these. And she picked My Life as a Foodie. And people fail to understand just how much influence Katrina's had on this show.
Right.
She started the Facebook group. She was the one that basically, you know, picked the name for it. She was the one that encouraged me. She was the one that always sent me articles and sent me ideas. She still does that to this day. I think she'll never stop doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been great to have that kind of support.
That's good.
Yeah. And yeah. It really has helped me.
Right.
And she always supported Dude Night. She was always supportive of that because she knew I got great joy from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got great joy. When it was working, I got great joy from it. When it failed to work, you know, when we couldn't get Gonzo to do a simple mic check or some shit.
Exactly.
Those are the things that drove me nuts. But still, I had a lot of fun. So I had a fear of doing it by myself because I didn't know if I could. And people would say, what are you going to do, talk by yourself? I go, yeah, just I'll pretend I'm talking to people. But, you know, the thing was, I didn't think anyone was going to listen. Five people maybe. You know, we had some friends I knew would listen. And I didn't even pay attention to numbers until late. But I started to realize I was getting emails from people and people were commenting on the blog and it was getting out there. So it grew exponentially. In the first year, I think, at the end of that first year, I knew I had some, you know, fairly solid numbers considering that I came from nothing. And a lot of it came from Dude Night. Jason Sainz.
Oh, yeah.
He came from Dude Night because he was listening to Big Foamy Head. We did a video with Dick Pepper, Big Foamy Dude Night.
That's right.
And yep. We were at Hollingshead.
Hollingshead, yeah.
And I don't know how he found it. But then from our old Dude Night site, he found my site and then started listening. And then we hooked up and then, you know, we started hanging out and we became friends.
He's a good guy.
He was a good guy. So that's basically how it all came into play. And one of the things that in the process while I'm doing this and putting together ideas of what the show was going to be about, because I really didn't know, I was watching The Godfather. And Katrina knew just how much I loved The Godfather. She had bought me the DVD collection. And on the DVD collection, it had commentary from Francis Ford Coppola. And so I'm listening to it one night. And it comes to the scene where Clemenza's showing Michael how to make his sauce, his pasta sauce. And it hit me that was the essence for me, one of the reasons why I like to cook so much. I think it epitomizes why I enjoy cooking. You're sharing recipes, but you're sharing recipes that have history. You know, I was never lucky enough to know my grandmother, but I knew my grandmother's sauce because my aunts would cook it. My mother, God bless her, was horrible. She'd water it down. Now, look, we were poverty stricken, okay? And I understand she wants to stretch things, but she don't stretch shit like pasta sauce.
No.
You know, so she'd watered it down. And I remember my sisters had moved out of the house, and I was still living with my mom. And one of my sisters comes over for dinner. She brings a jar of Ragu. Remember when Ragu came out in the glass jars?
Yep, big change.
Big change. And my mom said, "That's not pasta sauce." And we had it. It was freaking delicious, right? Because my mom's sauce, you could literally see the water.
Right. It was like tomato soup.
Right, but my aunts could make that sauce. Oh, and we would go, and one of my aunts, Aunt Jerry, she was fantastic. She would cook it just like she cooked it. She'd simmer meat and sausages in it all day long, take that stuff out. We'd have the pasta with the sauce, with the bread, and then after we'd have the meat course, and the meats would come out, and there'd be a ton of meats, and that was basically how she did the sauce.
Fantastic.
So it was really interesting. So I'm listening to the director's commentary, and I wanted to share that with you, because this was kind of like, I think I heard it like maybe 3 days before I planned on doing the show, and that's when I decided to use this intro on the very first episode.
Now, this scene is interesting in terms of how it was to collaborate with Mario Puzo. In the script, and in this case, I wrote the script, and then Mario kind of rewrote it with me, giving me notes in the script, and I wanted to really get an entire recipe in here so people could learn how to make tomato sauce. So in my script, the line was, Clemenza says, "Well, first you put in olive oil and some garlic, and then you brown some sausage." And when the script came back to me, Mario had crossed out the line, "brown some sausage," and said, "and then you fry some sausage." And he said, "Gangsters don't brown, gangsters fry."
You see? You start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, some tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick.
At this point in my career, I thought that all of my films should have a good recipe, and at least if the film didn't turn out so well, there'd always be a useful recipe in the film. The way Ritchie does it is not 100% authentic, but, you know, too. But it is true, in a meat sauce you make with sausage, you do put red wine in after you've fried the sausage and it's all hot, then you add the red wine and it sizzles and it gives it that nice aroma.
So, dude, we should have a beer, no?
Yeah, let's have one.
You brought a beer. You have a beer. I have a beer for later.
Okay.
And then I have another special surprise, which kind of ties everything in. It literally will wrap it all up.
Brings it all back together.
Does. Absolutely. So,
awesome.
What'd you bring?
I brought a Crown Series from Coronado Brewing Company.
Okay.
It's their Idiot IPA. It's their Imperial Pale Ale.
Okay.
And I don't know if these are on wide release or if they're limited release or whatnot, but I'm finding them more and more. So
they're Coronado's right in San Diego.
Yep. San Diego County.
Got it.
Yeah. And this one's true to Southern California, you know, brewing technique. It's heavy on the hops. It's basically four of the sea hops: Cascade, Centennial, Chinook, and Columbus.
Nice.
Yeah. So love it. Has that great citrus, floral, big fruit, little bit of a pine.
This would be the one time you can, it's okay to say the C word on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are four C's.
Nice.
Nice. Even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, but what I don't really know. They say they use nugget hops.
Nugget hops.
Yeah. So instead, is it more like a whole hop then, probably, versus pellet or just kind of the loose leaf?
That's a question for Rick Sellers, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of what they say in there. But let's give it a shot.
Go ahead, do it. Open it up. I want to also while you're doing that, tell you that you know, there were so many times, so many different times in the show when it either went up a step or turned a left turn. And like I said, in the beginning, I really didn't know what I was going to talk about or what I was going to say. I kind of had a general idea, but and I was coming off of watching Food Network and Emeril and Bobby Flay and all that stuff. We didn't have much. We had Cook's Tour, which was great. We had already previously met Anthony Bourdain. We went to a book signing.
Yep.
Right? We met him.
Yeah, that was fun.
We were cooking French.
He was so hungover.
Oh, he was way hungover. He had been drinking Japanese whiskey that night.
No, he was doing soju in Koreatown.
Oh, is that what it
was?
That's
what it was.
He told me Japanese whiskey. Was it really soju?
Yeah, sure.
Because that's not whiskey.
Shoyu or something like that. Is that what it is? Or soju?
Well, they say, no, it's our wine. And he goes, what's the alcohol content on this? And they go, like, I don't know, 27%. He goes, that's not wine. That's called alcohol.
That's right. That's
liquor. Booze. Yeah. Yeah, it's brutal. So anyway, it took a few points, and one of the times was I think when I really started to realize when we went to the farmer's market, and I would put the recorder, I had this little connector for my iPod, I'd stick it in my pocket, and I would go places. Like I went to the farmer's market. Right, I'd record without anybody knowing.
Yep.
And I'll tell you something. Listen, I shoot out to lunch on my iPhone. I'm going to shoot everything on my iPhone. I got a tripod attachment. The quality's great as long as you light it properly.
Nice.
But this thing is fantastic. I do everything with it. So anyway, at the time, I didn't have anything. So I stuck this iPod in my pocket, and I would go to the pho house, and I'd go to the farmer's market, and I went to the Asian store, and I'm talking to the man behind the counter. I don't even remember what episode that was. It was so long ago. But I almost wanted to have people I could talk to, you know, to bring another element in.
Yeah.
Because I needed somebody else to talk with. And the first person who wanted to come on the show was my cousin, Sean, who at the time was about to graduate college. Cal Poly Pomona, horticulture and agriculture. So he wanted to come on and talk about some of the issues that we had been talking about. You had sent me a link to this movie, King Korn.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And so I featured that on the show, and that was when we started to realize that the beef industry was kind of fucked up. You know, these cows are being fed corn, and then they're sick, so they have tons of antibiotics pumped into them, and they can't, they just can't survive. We kill them before they're dead. And if we didn't kill them, they'd really be sick and die. And so the beef industry was kind of messed up. So Sean came on to talk about agriculture and what it was like. He grew up on a farm. He'd been studying this stuff ad nauseum. I mean, this kid knew his shit. And so he came on to share some of the things that he'd learned and a lot of his insight.
There's so many issues. Like just water alone. Water rights are just incredible. Like in the Piro Valley right now, you can buy flat land, arable land, desert farming land for say $40,000 an acre, right? Well, that's pretty sustainable in a sense if you have say like 45 acres. You can grow some crops on that. You can grow alfalfa, you know, you can grow strawberries, you can grow artichokes, right, et cetera, right? Well, it requires a lot of water to support those crops. You're talking just perennial crops. You're talking 2 to 3, like 2 acre feet of water a year.
So water becomes the most precious commodity.
Right. And if you look at water alone, farmers don't get the water. The people get the water. So LA gets the water and San Diego gets the water, right?
Right.
So basically what they do is they tax the water really high so farmers can't afford to buy water. So therefore, when they have no water, they can't grow the crops.
So they're raising the rates on their water,
yeah,
and causing and forcing restrictions on them too,
right?
So
right.
It's even harder now for American farmer to make a buck.
It means right. So as a result, what's happening with this is that these farmers are cashing out and they're going to go to Mexico, or they're going out of the country. And not so much even the farmers, but the corporations are. You know, I went to a ranch in Santo Tomas, which is in the Baja California. Mm-hmm. It's 70,000 acres. It's approximately 18 miles along the Baja coast. And it's 18 miles, 70,000 acres on the coast, and it's controlled by 24 corporations that are here in the States.
So it's an American-controlled company in Mexico.
Yes.
Well, is there a higher profit margin for people who raise animals over growing things in the ground?
No. If you look at animals, you know, if you a basic example, if you look at a 1,000-pound steer, the space of that 1,000-pound steer is say 6 feet linear in length, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just think of how many 5-acre-gallon pots you can put on this table. You know, basically, if you use up all your space and just grow plants, you can make more money off that.
Okay, so there's more money in actual produce than in growing animals for slaughter.
Yeah. It depends on. Like if what type of animals you're raising, like for example, my industry, what I want to get into, like my own personal adventures I want to get into, is I want to start raising beefaloes.
Beefaloes.
Beefaloes, I can make money. Beefaloes.
Is that a cow and a buffalo together?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Wow.
And there's two different crosses. There's 3/8 cross and 5/8 cross.
That
and
sounds wrong. That's like, you know, sleeping with your sister. Hey, so let's drink some of this beer.
Yeah.
Salud.
Saluji.
A nice fat hop nose. I tell you, San Diego's got it going on down there, dude.
They really do.
You go deep into San Diego, man, it's like Napa, Sonoma. I mean, they're growing stuff down there. The beer is fantastic.
Right. Yeah, really eastern San Diego, just outside of Chula Vista. They're
raising animals, making sausages.
It's wonderful, yeah. It's nice.
A good place for a foodie, man.
Yep, big time. And Mexico's close.
Yeah, well. Hey, this is good, man.
It's very good.
Very sweet.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I think it's pretty well balanced for
nice
as big as it is.
Nice body.
Yeah, it's 8.5%.
Mm. 8.5, huh?
8.5, so there's some big boy pants on
you
that.
You hit Imperial IPAs at what, like 7.5 or something?
Yeah, I think isn't that kind of like where Pliny is? It's 7.5, 7.6.
It's up there.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of the threshold.
Okay. Because, no, I've seen some at 10.
Oh, yeah.
Like, was it Maharaja? What's the one that Avery does?
I think it's Maharaja.
Yeah. It's way the hell up there.
But you know what? Once it hits beyond 10, it kind of, in my opinion, has diminishing returns. It gets too boozy.
Yeah.
And I just don't really like it. Or it's too cloyingly sweet.
I'm afraid that what I brought out for us for the next beer is going to be that way, but hopefully not.
Hey, well.
I've never tasted it.
Then we'll have fun with it.
But you know it. You know it and you love it.
Yes. You love it.
So Sean was really kind enough to come back and talk, you know, about more stuff. And I know there are a lot of grumblings about Food Inc. And, you know, listen, we have to take notice to these things, okay? And I would get into these bickerings with people. And I loved it. I loved having people disagree with me because I'm learning. This was my process here.
Right.
I'm learning. It's my life as a foodie. What I've learned, what I've experienced, and what I'm experiencing now. You know, new things, the whatever is happening in the culture of food, whatever surrounds us, those were the things that were hot topic issues. I always wanted to talk about them. And you may not agree with me, and some didn't, and some stopped listening. I would get emails. You know, I just unsubscribed from it. You're full of shit. You should do your fucking research. And I'm like, you know, I do a lot of research. Right. If you only knew what kind of research I do on the show.
But all publications, all broadcasts, they all make mistakes.
Right.
And, you know, you come out and you say, yep, I screwed up.
And guess what, you fat fuck? This was free.
That's right.
You know, I'm entertaining your ass for free.
Exactly.
Fuck yourself. Yeah. Seriously. And I could care less.
Here, I want a refund from my subscription.
Yeah, I want a refund. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Here it is.
Here's nothing. I gave you nothing. You gave me nothing. Exactly. Here's nothing back.
Yeah.
Shit. Anyway, you know, here's the thing, though. And you can't deny this. You've taken that drive on the 5. From L.A. up to Sacramento, right?
Once or twice.
You see once or twice this month.
Yeah.
You see those signs up there that say the Dust Bowl and, yeah. You know, we're dying for water and, you know, the Smelta Delta. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yeah.
What the hell? Oh, no, I'm sorry. The Delta Smelta. I screwed that one up.
Delta Smelta.
It's this little fish that lives in the Sacramento Delta where the farmers would like to pull some water from, you know, so they could water their crops. For God forbid we should have, you know, carrots to eat. And no, they said, no, this fish is going extinct or it's got some disease or some shit. And they go, we don't want you pulling water from that because you might kill some of the smelt. Get the hell, can we eat the smelt?
No.
No.
Well, you could, but it'd probably take a lot of them to eat, make a meal.
Listen, if I can't eat that fish, that fish goes to hell, okay?
Yeah, it's not even a feeder.
As far as I'm concerned. I mean, we're dying over here.
Right.
And so food's getting expensive. And look, here's the other thing, too. I mean, we talked about this at the beginning of this administration that we're currently in. I mean, toward the end of the previous administration, the Bush administration, things weren't going so well. People started losing their jobs. And the price of food started to go up because the price of gas started to go up. So it got really expensive.
Right.
It got expensive to eat, to buy food. And that's sad. It should not be that way. You know, and we basically started to look heavily at how much we were starting to push things like organic farming. Really, is it that necessary? Not really. I mean, you Google this. There's a report that came out recently that said that eating organic is not any more beneficial for you in regards to minerals and nutrition than eating food that's not grown, you know, organically. The only difference is that, you know, they're spraying pesticides on it. We won't know about that for 100 years, but by then we'll be in the dust. So
that's right.
You know, it won't matter. So Sean came back to talk about his discussion on mad cow disease. And this was an eye-opener.
Everything they feed the animals, it's measured to the quality that they want. I mean, these farmers grow their alfalfa to what the dairy wants, you know. And so dairies only feed their cows, typically just not so much grains, but alfalfa, right? Well, now let's just say when you talk about BSC, you know, you have a steer. And basically, after you kill the animal, you grind up the bones and you get some other bones, some other carcasses.
And that shit ends up in the feed that the cows eat.
The calcium, right? And then you feed it right back to the offspring or the progeny of these
cows.
So
you're forcing cannibalism on the cow.
Absolutely, right? And so therefore that cow will eat it, digest it, and get large concentrations of it, and eventually it will affect the cow, right?
Right.
Well, that's in the beef production, right? Well, that was going on all up until a couple years ago, and we've had that process going on for the last 100 years, you know?
Right.
That has not changed, except we had no clinical signs of BSE because all of our cows are being killed at 18 months old. You know,
could technically have it.
Oh, we know for sure they've had it. They just haven't shown any physical signs of it because they've all been killed. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
I follow you.
So that's the whole nutritional ratio has changed in the last couple of years.
Fuck this! I'm going to become a vegetarian. Oh man, that sucks. Kind of brutal, no?
Yeah, it's kind of a snap in the reality zone there. Right. It's scary.
You know, I've at this point I started to say, you know what, I'm going to start really pounding the pavement about this, that, mm-hmm. you know, we need to support farmers and growers because it's a tough job. They're doing a lot to try to do things right. There are some that do it wrong, Smithfield Farms, but there are also some who, you know, who do it right. And yeah, it's expensive to buy that stuff because, yep. you know, it's not as cost effective for them to grow these things, you know, the right way. And, you know, it's up to you. If you can afford it, do you do it? One thing I would never want to do is grow up on a farm. Now, I grew up in Arkansas, and it was, you know, we raised pigeons, we raised chickens, we had a big giant plot, like almost, I had a whole acre to myself to grow stuff, and we just cut out this big plot in the middle of it and grew vegetables and stuff, and it was great. I loved doing that, but I would not have wanted to be Sean on his grandfather's garden, especially when he told the story of how he had to check on this baby calf to make sure that the calf was alive, because they don't have the money for an ultrasound machine or run MRIs and stuff. This was a manual job. And I hope no one's eating lunch.
Head up with the big...
Huh?
Head up with the big glove.
He's like, yeah. He's like, stick your hand up the cow's ass. You're going to go through the cervix, and then you're going to feel the fetus inside this pregnant cow, you know? And he goes, I want you to find the head. I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah, right. He's like, no, seriously, do it, you know? So I had to stick my hand up this cow's ass. At the meantime, this cow's going, moo, moo, you know? And it's just ripping its insides out of this
honey,
cow, right?
Honey, how was your day?
So I stick my hand through this tight, tight butthole. Basically, it's this long chamber. It's, you know, and I go through it. I go about to an elbow deep, and jeez. All of a sudden I hit the cervix, and I hit other parts of the component of the internal digestive tract of the animal, and I have to like go up and over, and basically I go into this other chamber, right, where this fetus is being held at, right?
Ugh.
And here I am, I can feel like different parts of this fetus, you know.
Ugh.
Like I'm,
I hope no one's having lunch right now. Stop eating.
So my grandpa goes, find the head of this cow, right? My face is like next to this cow's ass, like. My arm is way up this cow, you know? And so I find the head, and he goes, now tap it and see how it responds. So I find, I find this little baby's cow's head, and I tapped it, and the cow responded by hitting my hand, like butting my hand.
Oh.
You know, it was like butting, like boom,
like
boom.
A cat, when you're petting a cat and it does that thing with his head.
Right, yeah. Right. That's what it was doing inside of it, you know? In the meantime, the mom's going, moo!
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. Moo, get your 8-foot arm out of my ass.
Seriously, you know, and eventually I pulled it out and
I am never gonna complain about a sales meeting ever again. Can I get you a burger or anything?
Yeah.
You wanna have veal parmesan for dinner, maybe?
Double, please. Extra sauce.
Ouch. I mean, they're,
oh my god.
That's like some reality right there. Maybe that's more than needed to know.
That was definitely on the intimate side on cows.
You know, that's kind of stuff you need, that's like on a need to know basis, and I just didn't need to know.
We didn't need to know that one. Yeah. It seemed like both of my parents grew up on farms and I never heard a story like that.
That's pretty wicked.
Oh yeah.
You know, I was going to do this was about two or 3 years ago. I was going to do a documentary, a short documentary at his place. He invited me down to his grandfather's farm. They raised goats. And they were going to slaughter a goat, and then they were going to barbecue it for their family. We're going to have this giant barbecue.
Oh, wow.
And I was going to,
great.
It was great. I had everything set up. I'm really anxious. I'm glad I didn't do it, because at the time, that Sony DV camera that I had shot great video, but by the time you got it into a computer, it looked horrible.
Wow.
And it really would have looked bad. And I would rather just save something like that, because now I have good gear.
Yep.
I mean, I've got pro gear now.
All digital now.
Yeah. So, but no, I got sick like 2 days before, and I thought I was going to get over it the day before, and then finally I woke up that morning and I was still sick, and it was bad. I was up all night.
That's too bad.
So I called him and I said, dude, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. And they had spayed this special just for me that they were going to do this.
Oh, no.
So I felt fucking horrible. Well, you know, and I wasn't going to show them actually killing it. I was going to be a little classy about it and maybe show some B-roll over like the sun. I'd play the audio.
You do the 0.0 method.
Exactly. And then you just shoot the sky or something. Yeah.
Right.
Or shoot, you know, a picture of the Wilbur book or some shit. Yeah. But that was a turning point along with the King Corn thing. And then the other turning point was when I met Joe. And I met Joe... we moved into our house in the summer of 2008. I met her online between November and December of 2008. And at that point, and Katrina took the reins on that one too, because she hit it off with Joe. They were like instant sisters. She says, look, we're going to go eating a lot. We're going to eat at all these different places. The Bazaar, Jose Andreas.
That's right.
We went to Bouchon. I met Thomas Keller because of her. Uh-huh. This woman has a knack for just getting her ass wherever she needs to be. Yep. She says, I need to meet this person. She meets that person.
She'll find a way.
And she knew how much I love Thomas Keller.
Yeah.
So many times we'd eaten at Ad Hoc and everything and wanted to eat at Bouchon. Never did. We did this night and then met him in the kitchen. That was a highlight.
That's really neat.
Those are things I could not do. I could not have done had I not met her.
Yeah.
And not only that, I mean, she introduced me to so many people and I made so many friends. My friend Afaf, who just loves cooking. I mean, this woman is so passionate about food. She's from Syria. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now, you know, every time I see her, I'm afraid to ask, but I ask how her family's doing because you know what's going on in Syria. And she's worried.
I'm sure.
She's worried. You know, her brothers have been roughed up a couple times. They've got to keep their noses clean. It's not good. It's sad, too, because I think her cooking that food, cooking Syrian food, you see just how much passion these people have. Cooking that food takes her back there. And that's her way of actually getting back to Syria and being a part of that. So, and when I interviewed her in her kitchen, she started telling the story about how all the kids would gather around her mom when she'd make the special dish. And she would give them pieces of it to taste while she was cooking. And she started to cry. And I never had anyone cry on the show. Because there were certain things I was not going to do on the show. I wasn't going to let anyone cry. And I wasn't going to make anybody cry. And if they did cry, I was going to cut it out.
Right.
So she started crying. I cut it up a bit, but this is a pretty funny exchange.
There is actually a very popular dish, which is rockabay. Yeah. So we'll sit around her, and then while she's making it, after it's ready, a couple of batches, she'll just hand it to us as small balls, and we'll eat them.
Now, Fafi, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
Your eyes are watering. Are you homesick, or is it the onions?
It's both. I do miss home a lot. Though I love living here, my life is here with my husband and my kids. But I do miss home a lot.
Well, this kind of helps you feel like you're at home, right?
Yes, I do.
Maybe that's why you cook so much.
It does. It helps.
I tell you, you know, for many times we would get pissed off at Iraq and the Taliban and all this shit and say, let's carpet bomb that place. You know, I got to think about my friends. And my friend's family, and there are a lot of fantastic people.
Yeah, really good people.
Who live in Iraq, Iran, Syria, all mm-hmm. those countries, Turkey, everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't do that. You know, you can't generalize people, you know, but Syrian people, oh my God, are they, you remember Bizarre Foods when Andrew Zimmern went to Syria and they ran out of gas on their way to Madagascar or whatever it was something else, whatever the big capital of
Damascus.
Syria. Damascus, yeah. Thank you. Wasn't Madagascar, isn't that in Africa?
Yeah, I think so.
What am I, stupid?
It's okay, you've been drinking.
Yeah, not that much. I'm just dumb.
Yeah.
So, hey, by the way, this is getting to be a long show, so prepare, buckle up, Buttercup.
That's right.
This might be 2 hours, but it's the last one, so don't complain.
Exactly.
So anyway, yeah, no, so they run out of gas in the middle of the desert, and this guy's coming by in a scooter, sees that they've run out of gas. He grabs one of their gas cans, goes back into town, gets them gas, brings it back to them, doesn't take any money. Wouldn't take the money.
Right.
That's what kind of people Syrian people are.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have some good friends down in Brazil. Then mm-hmm. they're Syrian. In fact, actually in the area of Rio, there's a number of Syrian people.
There's a Syrian population.
Yeah, it's a fairly big Syrian population.
Yeah, Brazil is a big melting pot.
It is. It's US 2.0 as far as melting pot. They're the second largest of this culture. It's similar to us. But I really saw the warmth of the Syrian culture and the nation and just how the people are and everything. Right. I mean, Brazilians are fairly warm people once they get to know you, but it was even doubled up even more with the Syrian family, and everything is all food centric. Everything was, have you eaten? Everybody's in the kitchen.
That's
the
great.
The father, the patriarch of the family, he's like, I'm going to cook. But his version of cooking is he has three of the maids in there cooking, and he's the one in the apron tasting all the sauces and saying more and more of this.
That's funny.
Yeah, and then he gets to cut up the suckling pig at the table, you know, that kind of thing. But fantastic. They're great people.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they cook like kibbeh and things like that? Or
everything.
Everything.
Yeah. I mean, and it was, you had everything from the traditional Brazilian food, but then you always had kibbeh, or you always had flatbread. You always had,
right.
There was this olive oil, like with a, like a, interesting herb mix that was always on the table that you would kind of spoon over everything. And it was just fantastic.
I don't think there's a lot of things in Syrian cuisine where you would say, I don't like that.
No, it'd be tough to find.
Really, because I haven't had a single thing she's made that I've said that that's not what I like.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's a fantastic cuisine, and it's just a great culture altogether. I mean, the people are so warm.
Way to cover, man.
You got it.
Way to cover. I got a little belchy. I had to get away, and Dom sees it and immediately just jumps on and keeps talking. That was very, very good.
Consummate professional.
Early on in the show, I like I said, within the first 6 months, I figured no one was listening. Although I was getting some, I was getting emails from people, but they were emails like, they were praise emails. Like, I love your show. I just found it. You know, I take it to the subway. It gets me through drive time. You've opened my eyes to certain cuisines and stuff like that. And I don't take well to that kind of praise. I don't, because I don't take compliments well.
You love it.
I love it. I do love it, but it makes me embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I was embarrassed.
I understand.
So I didn't get emails that I would read on the show because I didn't want. And I would always shout them out, say, "Hey, I got an email from so and so, and you know, West Virginia," and I'd do the shout out. But I never want to read those letters. So instead, what I would do is I would write my own, and then I'd read them on the show.
Kind of like we did that at Dude Night. Too.
We did on Dude Night a lot. We wrote really horrible emails. Yeah. They were mean.
Yeah, from Greg.
Speaking of that, you know what? You know what's funny? How someone says someone's a mean drunk. Gonzo would get sweet as he got drunk. He was mean sober.
Yeah.
He was a nasty person sober.
Yeah, he became a big lovey-dovey when he got a few beers in him.
He would get really friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's why we want to get him drunk fast.
That's right.
Yeah.
We always have a fluffer beer to get him started.
So here are some highlights from first couple of years of fan mailbag on My Life as a Foodie. I get email for the show, and I've never really share it because it's, you know, I just never find a place for it. But I did select some emails that I got. And I thought I'd go ahead and do that. Seems like the right time now. The show is starting to gain a little bit of momentum, so I'm going to read these. This one was not signed, just anonymous. Anonymous from Haywood, Montana. Dear Phil, yesterday my teenage son arrived home from school early and caught me listening to My Life as a Foodie while I was parading in front of our bedroom mirror wearing high heels, ladies' underwear, a dress, and makeup. I almost died of embarrassment until I remembered I'm his mother. What the hell? Okay. This one's Stanley Spencer from Detroit, Michigan. He writes, "Hey, My Life as a Foodie. I know you're really into exercising and staying healthy, so I wanted to share this with you. You know how people always say early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise? Well, try telling that to my dad. For the last 40 years, he's gone to bed at 8 p.m., wakes up at 5 a.m., yet he's got issues with his colon. He's flat broke and thick as a brick." Well, that's just weird. This one's from Tim Higgins from Miami. He writes, "If vegetarianism is such a good idea, how come vegetarians all have bad breath and they fart a lot? If God wanted us to eat grass, he'd have made us rabbits." You know, Tom, good point. This one here is from Jeff McDaniels from Byram, New Jersey. He writes, "Hey, Phil, enjoy the show. You know that saying the camera adds 10 pounds to anyone on television? Well, I want to know how many cameras they're putting on Paula Deen. Have you seen her lately? Jesus, she's huge." That's a good question. I didn't, haven't seen her lately. This one is from Denny Bernard from Maryville, Missouri. Writes, "I read an article recently about how women apparently find chocolate more of a sexual stimulation than they do men. And if that's true, why haven't they got chocolate in their bedside drawers instead of you-know-what?" Another good question, and topical. So, thank you, Denny, for that. I'm not sure why that is. One last one I have here is from Chris Pether from Portland, Oregon. Writes, "Not sure if you've tried any snacks in these new Stay Fresh packages, but they do not work as advertised. I bought a bag of Cheetos last week, and the bag ensures that with the new Stay Fresh Zip Pack, your Cheetos will last 7 days. That's bullshit. Mine were all gone in 2. Well, Chris, maybe you should write him a letter. Neil Green from Akron, Ohio. He writes, "Why is it that bars refuse to serve me when I'm drunk, yet any fat bastard obese person can go into a McDonald's and buy all the crap they want? It doesn't seem fair to me. Why the double standard?" Neil, that's a good question. This one is from, who's this from? San Francisco. Melvin Denson. He says, "Hey, Phil, I followed your lead last week, and I went to an Asian market for the first time. The end aisles had all these small Asian women selling different things.
One woman was peddling this all-natural male enhancement drink that was designed to make men last longer in bed. Well, let me tell you something. She wasn't lying. It really works. This morning, I didn't wake up until 11:30. Ah, yeah, nice, Melvin. I'm glad it worked for you. And good for you, branching out to an Asian market. Not exactly what I had in mind when I told you to go to an Asian market, but it's good that you ventured out. Well, we're all over the place. Look at this. Birmingham, Alabama. Trevor Fredrickson. He says, whoever says that microwave ovens make frozen pot pies go soft is full of shit. Yesterday, I placed a Marie Callender's chicken pot pie in my microwave. I cooked it on full power for 1 hour and 40 minutes. Soft? Not hardly. I needed a sandblaster to get the damn thing off my dish. Is it any wonder food poisoning is on the rise when so many ignorant people are undercooking their food? Yeah.
That's great.
It's kind of, that was kind of cruel because my listeners are actually smarter than I am. But, morons writing in like that. That's brutal. Well, listen, I don't have anything to cook on the show, but Don does. And this kind of plays into the hands of doing video. We went on a bike ride a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And I get to his house and he says, listen, can you stay for lunch? And I said, of course I can. And he said, good. He says, I'm making paella. And I thought, oh, man, because he makes really good paella. And I thought, man, I should videotape it, but I wasn't prepared. And I had my iPhone and I thought, you know what? I'm doing everything on the iPhone now. I love that thing. I can't live without it. I've got this, this voice recorder program on it. So I decided I would tape him making his paella and have him kind of walk you through it. And then, you know, I did it in like 7 or 8 segments, and then I just pieced them together, brought them back in here in the studio, and made it one big piece. So, Don, you make some really, really delicious paella. I mean,
thank you.
It's the national dish of Spain. It's a rice dish with meat, and he had made it back in 2005, 2006, you made
it. Right, right.
I brought a video camera with me because I wanted to kind of video him doing it. And then after it was over, he says, hey, could you send me that video? So I exported it and sent him the file. He posted on YouTube. People lost their shit over that.
They went crazy. Well, a lot of the Spaniards were just diving into me and just beating the crap out of me because if it wasn't to the standard of their paella or whatever.
There's a certain way of making it, and that wasn't the way they made it.
No, it's not even that. It was more that there's certain ingredients you can and cannot put together. It's just like the Italians say you can't put cheese on a seafood sauce,
right?
You know, that kind of thing. And it's just kind of going along that line there. You know, they call it arroz con cosas. Rice with stuff.
Rice with stuff.
Yeah, instead of paella. But paella is the pan and paella is the rice. And then everything else is just kind of a vehicle of flavor. And what's really interesting is that I have seen a lot of different things on paella. And most of them say, you know what, paella now has become a very avant-garde thing. And, you know, you can put whatever the fuck you want in it.
Right.
And it's going to be fine. And it's accepted as paella. But, you know, they have paella Valencia, which is a standard, very traditional paella, which is, you know, rabbit,
right,
and some other meat, some sausage, and then some vegetable, and it's primarily the rice. But then they have, in other areas, down like Costa del Sol, they do a lot of paella that has a lot of seafood in it. They do paella with squid ink. They do paella with a number of different things. So it's really, you know, whatever you want to put in it. And what's funny is that since I've been making paella now for about 7 or 8 years, I think my paella now is much easier and simpler as far as recipe and procedure.
Well, you can make it in your sleep for one thing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I've been kind of working on the procedure of it, and you know, there's always getting the mise en place together and getting everything prepped. But then I think from start to finish as far as the cooking it now is actually easier for me than it was when I started. I think I've kind of simplified my steps.
Sure.
Yeah, and so, yeah, now I can really do it in my sleep.
How many hits that video has, like 120,000 hits on it or something?
Yeah, I think I looked at it the other day, it was like almost 138.
Okay, 138,000 hits. Yeah. There's like 1,200 comments.
Right, right. All over the board,
600
too.
Of them are from Don saying, fuck you, I make the best pie. You make it better than me, come down and make it.
I think I've commented on it only like 3 times.
Where's your video? That's my favorite.
Yeah. Comment.
Where's your video?
Yeah, where's your video?
We did that with the Beer Witch Project on Dude Night.
Oh, that was great.
People are like, you stole our idea. And Spoon comes back and he goes, where's your video then, dipshit? You did it so well. Listen, we weren't the first ones to do Beer Witch Project, but we were the first ones to do it well.
Exactly.
I mean, ours was at least entertaining.
It was great. Right. I think we threw more F-bombs in there than the Big Lebowski.
Right. And say, hey, tell you what, same thing with Dude Food.
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't the first person to come out with Dude Food. There was a book on Amazon called right. Dude Food, and it's the typical bullshit that you see with everything else. Dude Food, and it's this guy, it's 50s art with a guy, you know, in an apron and some stupid fucking cargo shorts and Bermuda shorts
right.
and a print shirt. His big beer belly, and he's drinking like Budweiser or some shit.
Exactly.
You know, and he's cooking. Everything's on the grill. And he's wearing a dumb apron that his wife bought him for Christmas and forces him to wear, otherwise he'd feel guilty.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's not dude food. Dude food is like making shit from scratch. You know, making sausages, making bacon, making beef jerky, instead of going to the store and buying it.
Barbecue.
The barbecue.
Real barbecue.
And then when that douchebag, what's his face, Guy Fieri, he starts doing dude food. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, dude food.
That killed me.
Dude. His hair is on fire.
Dude.
Yeah. So anyway, so this is, pardon if you don't like the audio. It was, I mind you, it was done on the iPhone. Here's Don cooking paella in his apartment.
Hi, Don, you going to make paella today?
Yeah.
It's a dish you're known for, right?
Yeah, I make it a lot.
You do?
It's kind of a ongoing thing, you know, life work, keep changing it a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, of course, yeah.
Adjusting as I go.
I think it's this and the chicken with morels, or is it?
Yeah.
A mushroom soup with morels.
No, chicken.
Is it?
Chicken, yeah. Sauteed chicken with morels. That's one I really like to make.
We have
I'm a one-trick pony.
We have a video online where it posted a long time ago, back when I had a really shitty video camera.
Oh, shit, that was a long time ago, huh?
It's on YouTube, and
yeah.
We made this dish, and man, Spanish people got irate. I mean, you're making international. So it's like trying to make, you know, marinara sauce for Italians.
Exactly. Exactly. Be careful.
These Spanish people lost their shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're the world's authority on everything. That's just kind of the way they think.
So paella is basically it's a rice dish with heavy in saffron, with chicken, lots of other meats, like seafood, stuff like that. What's in this?
This one here, we're going to do like mixed seafood, chicken, and some chorizo, Spanish chorizo sausage.
What are you doing right now? What's cooking here?
Just sauteing the chicken up, trying to get a little flavor in there, since we're not doing a chicken stock for our rice.
So we got olive oil in the pan, some Spanish olive oil, a little bit of chicken thigh, and he's going to salt and pepper,
Salt and pepper, that's it. Yep. And then kind of brown that up, and then take it out of the pan, and then start kind of sauteing things as we go. Get the vegetables done, throw the rice in, let that toast, get the seasoning on it. Pour on the cooking liquid and let it sit.
Yeah, well, looks good so far. I'd eat it just like this. What?
I wouldn't. I'd give it a little more time.
And that bike ride made me hungry.
I guess so. That's why I'm starting now. That was a fun time.
It was good. We had a good ride today.
Yeah, we did. Great time.
Okay, so we have chicken. We've got some pimentone, some tomatoes, onions, garlic. We've got some chorizo, Spanish chorizo. Now, that's a hot or mild?
It's just standard Spanish chorizo, so it's pretty mild.
This rice is special rice. It's, they call it arroz in Spanish, of course.
It's arroz de Valencia, yeah. So it's just basically Valencia rice. So it's a small grain, it's a short grain. So it's kind of, you want to kind of keep it more to the tooth, more al dente, than a soft, mushy, standard American rice.
And then chicken stock.
Yeah.
We add, right?
Just stock liquid, cooking liquid, really is all you're looking for.
And then some seafood.
Yep. Yeah, you don't have to do the thing with the seafood. I mean, paella is the pan, and it's rice. And so the star should always be the rice. And, you know, that's the biggest thing where the Spanish start getting their heart on is because they say, oh, that's arroz con cosas, rice with stuff. You're not making paella. It's like, no, the pan's the paella. The rice makes it paella. What you put in it is just going to flavor it. I'm not trying to make paella de Valencia. I'm just making paella because that's the pan I'm using in the technique.
Do they not put anything else but rice in their paella?
No. They do. They put rabbit. They put sausage. They do their whole thing. They put the whole vegetable thing in. But a lot of times they'll not mix seafood with fowl. You know, they'll stay either seafood or they'll stay with the sausage and the chicken or the rabbit. That's their prime thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, that chicken is browning up really nice. You got some fond down there at the bottom. That's going to get picked up by everything else.
Exactly, as it comes along.
All right, so now you've added the onion and the bell pepper here and the garlic.
Yeah, onion, pepper, and garlic. No, trying to get that start a little bit, sweat it a little.
It's on medium heat, right?
Yeah, I've actually got it down pretty low right now.
You know, sweat them out?
Yeah, just trying to bring it down, sweat it, get a little color on them. Not even color, take the color out of them.
Now you got some water heating up here. What's that for?
It's basically the cooking liquid we're going to use on the rice once it's ready. Okay. Then we'll put that in to soften up the rice. So, I mean, you can use stock, you can use really whatever you want, but unfortunately I gapped on getting some chicken stock, so we're using water.
That's all right. Hey, listen, I mean, I think in a lot of places they'll just use water, right?
Yeah, actually, Black Sheep Bistro, they primarily just use water, and they relied on everything that you're putting in to give it the flavor instead of a chicken stock.
The Black Sheep Bistro, for those of you who don't know, was this great place here in Tustin that closed down eventually. They did it for so long, but they cooked Spanish, French, New American, as we called it, right?
Yeah, New American. They did the Mediterranean. They were pretty big on Southern French, Italian, and Spanish. That was their big thing. So they kind of hit all over there. But they primarily, I think they primarily were Southern French and Spanish was their big thing.
You picked up a lot from him. You would actually talk to that guy, and he taught you a lot about cooking.
Talked his ear off. Yeah, I really liked talking to him. He's actually a pretty nice guy. You know, once you kind of got through the shell, started talking to him, he's actually a pretty damn cool dude.
Oh, so you're going to add the chorizo in here now?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get a little flavor of the chorizo and the thing, and it takes a little while for it to cook too, so.
Now the chorizo is really going to flavor everything now.
Yeah, I'll start getting some color in there and really start bringing on some goodness to the plate.
The difference between Spanish chorizo and like the Mexican chorizo is that Mexican chorizo is not dry cured. This chorizo is dry cured, right?
Exactly, yeah. The Spanish chorizo is basically just fresh pork, and then they just season it, and then you get it like loose. And then you break it up. You never eat it in a sausage form.
So you want to make some really good on your own. Make your own Mexican chorizo. Put a little tequila in it.
Yeah.
Spice it up.
Tequila makes everything better.
Hell yeah. It makes memories better.
Or makes you forget things. Now we're getting some color on it.
Yeah, it's looking good. Now you've added the pimentón and you've added the tomatoes.
The piquillo. Oh, I think those are those. Is it pimenton or piquillo peppers?
They're pimenton. Pimento.
Pimento piquillo. Yeah. So they're piquillo.
They're piquillo. Okay.
Yeah, they're piquillo. Right. So that's in. I'm about ready to add the wine and saffron broth.
I should add that the tomatoes and the little green chili that we added here is from my friend's garden up in Glen Ellen, California here.
Damn straight. They look beautiful. They smell great. It was so fun cutting them. You could just tell they were just so ripe.
Juicy.
Oh, awesome. They make this taste fantastic. No, color's looking good right now.
Yeah, nothing's burning. You got it on pretty low heat here.
Medium heat. Yeah, you don't need to go that high because the pan's so thin. You don't need to get that high on your heat.
Let's talk about these paella pans. Is this stainless steel?
No, this is just carbon steel. That's why it's all rusty.
Oh, okay. A little rust in your food help you. Now we're going to throw in here. This is saffron and wine.
Saffron and white wine. Basically, I do a little infusion on the saffron to bring out the flavors. Then you throw it in when it's got a nice sizzle going so that you can burn off the alcohol. And then I'll throw my more dry seasoning on it before I put the rice in so that you can get a good crust on the rice. So. Oh, yeah. There we go.
Cooled it all down.
Yep. So now just mix that up a little bit. And let that...
Now, these Spanish would probably lose their shit again because you're throwing wine in here.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's accepted.
That's accepted, but mixing sausage with chicken and seafood, no, that's not good.
No. You know, gotta know. Arroz con coisas.
What was that?
Arroz con coisas.
Oh, that's rice with shit.
With stuff.
All right. Arroz con merde.
Ah, merde.
Gonna season it with a little more salt.
Yeah, because we got rid of enough salt today on our bike ride, we can replenish.
Talk about it, I almost passed out.
I think this is critical. This part, basically, when you throw the rice in, you want to give it time to get all the, sop up all the moisture and almost get dry again. Because all that flavor and everything that you've built up with the vegetables and the garlic, saffron, all the spices that you put in are actually going into the rice. And then when you put that cooking liquid in, your water, your stock, it's going to release some of that and just kind of bring it all together.
So you've added the all the spices, the smoked paprika, you added sweet paprika.
Smoked sweet paprika, the saffron in the wine, salt and pepper, and I put a little cayenne in it just because it's for us.
And then rice.
And then the rice. And so now I'm going to add the cooking stock.
That quiets shit down, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Now, as you go, do you add more liquid as it goes on? Or
hopefully not. And then I'm just going to kind of mix this, incorporate it really well, and then that will probably be the last time I touch it until it's done.
At what point do you add the seafood?
I'm going to put it in about 5 minutes. And I'll probably start with the shrimp and the calamari.
Because they take longer to cook.
They take a little longer, and then I'll put the scallops in probably towards the end.
Do you think in some parts of Spain, do you think they add things like octopus and stuff?
They put whatever they catch. They'll put shrimp, they'll put fish, they'll put, you know, shellfish, whatever. That's the beauty about paella. I mean, you can really do whatever you want with it. And they do that squid.
No, don't tell that to the Spanish, because they'll say, fuck you, you're fucking up our dish.
You know what? It's not the case, because each region does it a little different. And that's the thing. That's the thing. I mean, most of the guys that are out on there being really hypercritical are usually just the douchebags that really probably don't even cook.
That was the biggest problem I had with food bloggers in this entire history of the show, when I started to see these food bloggers criticizing, you know, chefs like Ludo or even Thomas Keller to that extent. Yeah. I thought, who the fuck are you to criticize a chef of this caliber, with this talent, and you can't even cook yourself?
Right. You're some anonymous food blogger, you know, or some Yelper.
Oh, that was the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to talk about other podcasts that are out there, but Food is the New Rock has a pretty funny one with Michael Voltaggio, and he tears into Yelpers, and it's awesome.
I love it.
I'll just leave it at that.
I remember someone asked him, what was the difference between his food and everyone else's food, and he said, I use more salt.
Yeah, my food doesn't suck.
No, actually, it doesn't.
No. Okay, well, that's it.
All right, what are we doing now?
Now we're going to throw in some shrimp, start getting that little briny flavor in. I'll probably put the calamari in there, too. We have shrimp, calamari, and scallops.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. It's all my favorite shit.
So the scallops will go in last because they're so delicate. They turn into little rubber bands.
They do. They pop if you overcook them. In fact, you know, we do. Scallop sashimi is fantastic. Just slice it really thin. Crudo. Yep.
Yeah, scallop crudo. That's it. So we're getting down to the final.
So shrimp about 3 minutes, then you put the calamari. Are you putting the calamari and the shrimp at the same time?
Yeah, kind of just throwing it in. I'll probably wait a little bit on the calamari because that has a tendency to get a little rubbery too. So I'll probably throw it in more towards the end, maybe just before the scallop. There's no rules, except unless you're in Spain.
Apparently.
It's probably pretty boring audio listening to that now. It's just kind of bubbling really.
There's
slow.
Nothing. There's nothing boring about this, honestly. So you've added the scallops.
Everything's in. Everything's in. Now we're just kind of cooking the liquid off and hoping the rice takes as much as possible. I'm trying to clean up the edges so that nothing really burns too much on the corners, trying to get it all in the liquid, and we'll just let it sit.
Now, it's an awfully big risk here, doing this without tasting the rice. So if the rice hasn't cooked enough, you might overcook the seafood.
No, I'm pretty good as far as the timing on it. I know it's about a 15-20 minute period, and we put this in about 10 minutes before. So, and you want to get some of that flavor of the seafood in the rice, so you're hoping that some of that liquid that comes off the seafood goes in there too.
Well, let's talk about the crust, because there's a crust that builds along the bottom of the pan with the rice.
And we've been building that actually since we put the rice in with the liquid. I really haven't. I did one total mix on the pan, but then after that, I've kind of let it sit, and I haven't really touched the bottom. And hopefully, when this is all said and done, there'll be this nice brown crust on the bottom that's like super flavor.
How critical is that crust?
It makes the paella. It takes paella from good paella that doesn't have it to awesome paella. That's really what it does.
Without the crust, this is basically like rice-a-roni with shit in it.
Yeah, arroz con cosas. Yeah, but then once we get the sofrito on the bottom, the little crust, then it's paella in my book.
All right, dude. Listen, thanks for letting me tag along on this journey. It looks fantastic.
Hey, I hope you enjoy it when it's all done.
Dude, I got to tell you, that was the best time. That was the best paella you'd made.
Thanks.
It really was.
Thanks. Well, like I said, I've kind of changed the procedure a little bit. I think before I was making my rice a little too al dente.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm giving it a little more time.
If it's too chewy, I don't like it.
Right.
You know, and if it's too burnt, I don't like it.
Right. Well, it gets starchy is what, I mean, if you don't cook it enough and you bite into it, it has a starchy taste, which I don't like.
I get pasta al dente. I don't get rice al dente.
Right.
I don't understand why, you know, people like that. But they do.
Yeah, they do.
Great job, man.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Maybe you went a little too overboard shitting on the Spanish, or at least those guys who were, you know, douching on you. But you got nasty once. I mean, one time you got so pissed off, you said, look, listen to me, Spain. And this was at the time when Spain wasn't doing so well in football.
Right.
You bitched about the football team. You told them, you know, get a decent squad together. You bitched about Fernando Alonso not winning F1 championships and cries when he loses. It was not good.
No.
It was not good.
Then they got a team, and they got he grew a set.
Got a championship, yeah.
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 So, good. I guess maybe they listened to me.
Well, listen, it's time for my beer.
Okay.
I missed this beer the first time it came around. Dogfish Head, I'm very fond of Dogfish Head. Sam Caligione, I always have been. And he made this beer that celebrated Miles Davis's album, Witch's Brew. Oh, I'm sorry.
Bitches Brew.
Bitches Brew.
Yeah.
And
it is a great album.
Right. It was a very, very good album. And if you've listened to the show, sometimes you'll hear stuff that kind of sounds like jazz but isn't. It's kind of like a modern jazz. I'm a big fan of jazz. I always have been. I saw Miles Davis in concert when I was in college, and it was one of the highlights because he died, I think, about 2 or 3 years later.
Yeah.
And it was great to see. He played with his back to us all night, but that's just how he played. He would walk around and look at the ground and play. And,
yeah, I saw him at the White House, same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah,
same thing, right?
Yeah, you saw mostly his back.
Yeah, just played.
Right, and then his cheek kind of come out every once in a while.
But he was so influential with jazz, and he would actually mute his trumpet, and that was that sound, that special sound.
It's beautiful.
And you'll hear it in a lot of songs now. They still use it, and he made it popular.
Yeah, he made that style.
So it came back, this Bitches Brew, and I didn't fully understand it. Now, the reason why I passed on it before is because I didn't know anything about it. And then Brewmasters comes out,
right,
and he talked about making the beer, and they showed him making the beer. So there was this whole history behind it. Okay, so I got a bottle because it came back around. He made it again. And basically what this is two beers. It's an Imperial Stout that he's mixed with another ale that was brewed with honey and geisho root. Now, I don't know what geisho root is.
I have no idea.
Any relation?
Ethiopian marker or something.
To geisha, maybe?
No, it's African root. I remember, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to open a bottle.
Woo!
Yes, good beer. Give me a glass there, dude.
Yep.
Pour you in. I'll check the ABV on this.
Oh my God! Look at the color on that.
Black nectar.
That's inky.
Now listen, I've never tasted this, so I hope it doesn't suck. But
okay.
According to that video,
yeah, everybody loved it.
They loved it, man.
Yeah,
they freaking loved it. And Sam has had a couple misses of these special beers that he makes. I don't like all of them,
right?
But I like a lot of them.
Why? Well, I like that he tries.
I'll never not,
I like that he tries different things.
I'll never not buy one.
Right.
If it comes out, it's new. If I haven't had, like Namaste and there were some others that we had, like Sati. Mm-hmm. I don't need to try those again. I've had them.
Right.
This is 9% alcohol.
Okay.
Okay, so it's...
Respect the beer.
Is that... That's Imperial Stout, right?
You would think so, yeah.
9%.
This is, honey and geisha.
Yeah. Hey, cheers.
Geisha.
Just a little...
Salute.
All right, let's taste. Let's smell. Hey, smell!
Whoa. Roasty.
Oh, man. Yeah, smells like an Imperial Stout.
It does.
You know, it's funny. You put on the label that you've got honey and geisha root in it, and people are going to go, oh, I taste too much honey. Kind of like that 16th anniversary stone.
Oh, wow.
Too much lemon verbena.
Quit
Shut
talking,
up.
More drinking.
All right.
Boy, look at that. That's nice. Roasty flavor comes throughout. That's really good.
Oh, that
That's like
is...
an Imperial Stout. Fantastic.
Do you know what?
Mm.
This is better than Stone's Imperial Russian Stout. And I love Stone's Imperial Russian Stout.
Yeah, no, this is really good. I love that roastiness in it.
This is really good.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's soft at the end.
Exactly.
You probably didn't hop the shit out of this either.
No, I bet it's really light hopped.
Oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's good.
Philly Reiki.
Donnie Reiki, too. Yeah, this is good. And I like the label.
Mm.
Beautiful artwork.
Oh, that's fucking nice. Well, listen,
I hope that while I've done this show, that you guys have pulled something out of it. I hope it's changed some things for you. I hope it's given you pause. I hope I've entertained you. I tried not to suck, and I know sometimes I suck, but I hope I gave you things to think about. I hope I encouraged you to try new things. I hope you found some things that you thought you'd never maybe eat before or try. And I know that we'll continue to do that without to lunch. That will be that way. There were some other shows I wanted to do, some videos, dude. One was called What the Fuck Is That? With WTF.
Oh, that's where, right.
We would eat like bugs and durian. And,
well, we did eat the bugs. We did do the durian.
We did that. So but we did them, yeah. Make a new series out of it. And so we would eat like stuff like in the, I think the first episode I said I was going to eat pork uterus.
Right.
And I never did because I'm a pussy. But if I'm going to do it, we should do it on video.
Yeah.
I mean, we know where it is.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought that would be another one we could do. And then another one I thought of was, I did it twice on the show and it just didn't sound, it didn't come through in audio. Eat it before it eats you.
Oh, that's right.
Where you could eat shark, alligator, snake, mountain lion, bear, whatever we got our hands on, you know?
Yep. Well, it's kind of limited. You'd run out of them after a while. You'd
I know.
Run out of material.
Short-lived.
Exactly.
No, I own the rights to LudoBytes.com.
Ludo at home?
Oh, I'm sorry. LudoBytesAtHome.com.
Okay.
I bought that domain immediately when I found out he was doing his book because I didn't want some douchebag getting it and then doing a shitty job.
Right.
If it was somebody who we knew of and that, you know, we saw that they were, you know, capable, they weren't going to hurt him.
So if somebody's going to do a shitty job, it's going to be us, damn it.
You let us do it. Yeah, exactly. So I got that and I thought, well, maybe we could do a video series doing selected recipes from the book. But then I thought, because then that's too limiting. So I'll hold on to it. I'm just kind of protecting. But I think that the at-home thing has been done to death.
Right.
You know, my friend Carol did French Laundry at home.
Right.
And then she did Alinea at home.
Yeah.
And then she had some serious personal issues that prevented her from finishing that project. And I remember emailing her and told her that I love my show so much that if I found a day when I couldn't do it anymore, it would kill me. And that all happened when I got high blood pressure and had to go to my doctor. And I said, well, am I going to stroke out? And she goes... No, you just need to take this medication. I go, good, because otherwise I'd be doing a podcast called My Diet by the Duty. You know, so the little things that you know you were going to fight through. So whatever it was that happened with her that prevented her from doing the show, I know it devastated her.
Yeah.
So anyway, I hope you've learned some things. I'll tell you what I've learned. I've learned that there's two types of restaurants. There are types of restaurants that you go to be entertained, and then there are types of restaurants that you go to get fed. And for all intents and purposes, LudoBytes, for all the pomp and circumstance, always fed me. Ad hoc, Bouchon, fed me. Keller, feed you.
Yep.
You know, you're amazed at how good the food is. Now, avant-garde cuisine is mostly entertainment, but then you've got someone like Eddie Shepard, who packs so much punch of flavor. The artistry on the plate is just brilliant. You know, that enhances your experience. And I think as long as you're being fed... And as a vegetarian, I don't know if you're eating, you know, a vegetarian cuisine. I don't know what it's like to be vegetarian. I don't know if you leave satiated from a meal like that. You know, I couldn't
see how that would happen.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
that's a wheelbarrow full of vegetables.
But it's experience. Like Bazaar. They used molecular avant-garde cuisine, molecular type of, you know, elements in that food. But
are they still doing it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, okay. He's, you know, he does that. And he's got this other place, Bar, in Philadelphia. Or right. Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Right. And no, he does it there. But, you know, you leave fed. El Bulli was another one, you know, where you left, you know, entertained, but you also left fed.
Well, I'd hope so. It was like 60 courses.
Yeah, and like $600. That was ridiculous.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to be fed, go to an eatery. But sometimes you want an experience. You want someone to evoke some memories. And I think, you know, that was another thing. Farmers markets was our revenge on supermarkets. So I learned that the farmers market... was our way of getting closer to the source in a lot of ways. I mean, that first farmer's market we went to, turned out that place was a fraud.
Yep.
You know, so you've got to be careful. If you're a vegetarian, it's definitely the place you would shop for everything. I think we may never see the end to fish coming from the sea, but I think we'll see fish start to get more expensive and maybe one of those commodities that only rich people can afford after a while. I think that we're going to... probably see a decrease in production, and we may see an increase in price. I don't know. I can't tell you for sure.
I heard something scary the other day.
What was that?
That we're actually fishing out tilapia.
Oh, we know. I've heard that too.
Yeah, yeah. That's scary.
You remember? I don't remember what it was. It was years ago, and I talked about it here. You know, we used to get, like, if you buy those filet of fish that would come in, you know, Gordon's.
Right.
The battered fish.
Yep.
Well, that was cod for years.
Right.
And then they ran out of cod.
Yeah.
Or cod got in short supply, so they started exactly. using pollock.
Right.
And then they ran out of pollock, and they started using something else, like surimi or something. They ran out of that. Now we're down to something, I don't even know what the hell it's called.
Some mudfish.
Some mudfish, yeah. Something flaky and white.
Scary.
It just has no flavor. I mean, it's literally, we're running through. If you don't think it's happening, it's happening. I learned that the Food Network planted the seed for food and entertainment, but YouTube is taking a ball and running with it.
Big time.
They are big
oh,
time.
Oh, yeah. So much better.
You don't leave don't leave it in the hands of Google. They'll take advantage.
Exactly.
They're smart, man.
Yeah. No, they do it right.
Very, very smart. They do it right. Listen, I think the biggest thing I've learned is that there are approximately 1,500 types of food or styles of food that I have yet to taste. Our show.
Let's get to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got some work to do.
The beauty about it is that probably 1,450 of them are right here in Southern California.
We're pretty rich here.
We are lucky. We are very lucky.
But if we run out, then we just have to venture out further.
That's okay. You know? Yeah, we'll make it to, San Francisco?
Do some out-of-state stuff, too.
Okay.
Hey, why not?
Absolutely.
We'll just write it off as an expense.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do some thank yous here before we sign off. Katrina, especially, for supporting me for so long. And for really being there. And listen, her situation has nothing to do with this decision. This is something completely separate. I'm able to balance. We have life balance. It's tough sometimes, but we get through it. And it does help me. And it's more of a distraction. So it's like I said, it took me 3 months to argue with her over this. You know, before I finally convinced her. And she goes, okay. And it was that night. We were going to bed. And she goes, okay, I get it. It's a good idea. I get it now. And I thought, thank God. Maybe I just wasn't being a good communicator, right? But she finally agreed, and it made me very happy. And listen, I'll tell you something. If I did not have a chance to feature her on the show months ago, I'd probably still be doing this. Because I was going to do it until I got her on the show. And that's then she good. Came on, and, you know.
That was a good show.
We got a good, good response from that. Dude, I want to thank you, man. You've been really, would I be here today if this wasn't happening?
I appreciate it.
No,
it's been fun. It's been fun, the little bit that I can kind of throw in my 2 cents here and there, and just being graced with the presence, come on the show and have fun with that. And
we're just getting started.
Yeah, I go out and screw around. Hey, everybody, I promise that I'll have Phil hand me the iPhone and so I can get his mug on the
you don't,
camera.
You don't want to see me on this.
Yeah, no, have him just slopping noodles all over his chin so I don't look like the the babbling idiot out there all the time.
It's like watching an aardvark eat dinner.
That's okay.
No.
It doesn't look much better of me calling me Captain Hoover.
I want to thank Joe, of course, for being supportive, for being pivotal and changing so much about the show and providing all the opportunities that she did. And to Bobby Bogner, who was really pivotal and just out of the blue looked me up and introduces me to Nathan Lyon and Average Betty and kind of let me into this
food, Zane Lamprey.
This rat pack. Zane Lamprey, yeah.
Right.
This rat pack of young and upcoming food entertainers. And that was a door I never would have saw myself walking through. And I felt like I belonged. And listen, I did not take part in anything at the Taste Awards coming up this winter because I just didn't feel like this was a strong year. And I really kind of want to push for more out to lunch, more videos. And I can guarantee you that 2013, you'll see a bit of a different thing here, a different dynamic. I'm hoping. So there's that. I want to thank all of you who listen, everybody, every step of the way. There are a handful of people that have been here from the beginning. Jason, Nick is another one. I don't remember if it was Nick or somebody else, but I think it was Nick, was trying to get this girl. He was trying to get this girl to hang out with him. So they go on a road trip from like Wisconsin to Chicago, and he takes a bunch of CDs and burns my show or burns it onto to an iPod. They listen to my show. Dude, listen to this. They listen to my show from Wisconsin or Milwaukee, wherever they were, all the way to Chicago.
That's great.
I can't listen to my mouth for an hour. I mean, when this show's done, I don't listen to it again.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was living down in Brazil, I used to listen to the show a lot and over and over and over. I'd listen to it 2 or 3 times until the next one would come out.
Wow.
So, yeah. No, it's good.
That's a compliment.
It's good.
Gambler as well. All the Dude Night listeners. Everyone that came from Dude Night and caught up, and they said, you guys should do Dude Night again. And I thought, that's not happening.
No,
this is happening, though.
This is going to work.
And this will be beneficial. Some people who I definitely couldn't have done the show without. Apple, Felt Tip Software, Alesis, Yamaha, Audio Technica, Avid, Microsoft, Nikon, Canon, Sony, Beats by Dre. all my podcasting buddies, Should I Drink That, The Beer Report, Big Foamy Head, James at Basic Brewing Radio, and everybody from Beer Safari who provided support and friendship in the last 5 years. Podcasters, man, for the most part, great people.
Yep.
It's a really good community to be in. Eater, Chow, The Brazer, Travel Channel, CNN, Food Network, CBS News, ABC News, and Bravo. Dude, that's it. I'm out.
What about The Onion?
Oh, The Onion was another one. I left them off the list. Oh, come on. They're fantastic. Yeah. I left them out. Look, I have one more thing we want to do before we bail here. And I know we just started drinking this beer. But in 2005, it was in late 2005, I became an ambassador for Maker's Mark, which is a bourbon that's right in Kentucky. I was a fan of Baker's Mark. I liked it. And so they had this program where you could become an ambassador. And as an ambassador, what they do is they send you all this stuff in the mail. And when you go out to eat or you go to a bar and you see that they have Maker's Mark at the back of the bar, whatever, you take your bar check or the tab or anything, you put this little sticker on there that says, thank you for supporting Maker's Mark. Thanks for having the class to support Maker's Mark.
Nice.
And provide it for your customers. So in essence, they would, every Christmas, they'll send me stuff, like little gifts and, you know, golf tees or markers, and it's always
great.
Their marketing is fantastic.
They're very good.
So what they did was, in the mail, they sent me a photograph of a cask, a big giant oak cask that had a serial number on it, and that serial number was the same number, my member number, as an ambassador. And they had just taken the bourbon and put it in this cask that was going to age for anywhere from 5.5 to 6.5 years. And they invited me to come down when they were going to get ready to open it and bottle it. And I could come down and take part in the bottling. And I couldn't do that, of course, the circumstances surrounding that. And that is exactly about this time. You know, it would have happened probably in May or June. And it didn't happen. And it did happen, but I wasn't there.
Right.
So I thought, just to kind of toast and cheers to the show, that we would have a couple fingers of Maker's Mark. And, you know, I just got it recently, and I thought that, you know, who knows? It might have been
it
from
could
that
be that. Could be that cask. Well. That's
so,
right.
You up for that?
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Let me go get the bottle.
Right on.
I got ice in some glasses here.
The sound of loveliness.
And I've got the bottle right here. And it's cool, when they make Maker's Mark, you'll note it, you know, it's kind of a really strange thing, but they actually put red wax over the top of it.
Yep.
Yeah, when, who was his name? Kevin Brausch, Thursday Traveler, he went down there, and he bottled some.
Didn't he learn the dipping technique?
Yes.
Yeah.
With the cigar?
Right.
Yeah. Couple fingers, okay?
Wow, those are a couple of sausage fingers, but yeah, I'll take it.
Sorry then. Hey, listen. You only live once.
That's right.
We're not going to be doing this again, so.
Exactly.
One more here. There we go. There we go. Let that get cold.
Shake it around a little bit.
Shake it around.
Stir it up.
Now, listen, there are tons of different bourbons out there. Okay. Maker's Mark is probably not, you know, people out there are going to say, no, there's better bourbon. There is better bourbon. I'll agree. There are some really good bourbons. Elmer T. Lee. Woodford Reserve.
Woodford's good. Buffalo Trace.
Buffalo Trace. Was it? Pappy Van Winkle's.
It's a hard one to get.
Well, you can't get it, but it's like top tier, right?
Right, yeah.
So, no, for your run-of-the-mill good stuff, you know, straight down the middle, I'll go to this every time.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's nice. You can find it everywhere, too.
Yeah.
You can find it on a lot of bars, pretty standard stuff, and I think it's fantastic. It's a good bourbon.
So do me a favor. Next time you guys are going to buy some bourbon for a party or whatever, pick up some Maker's Mark. Think of Philly, you know?
That's right.
Do it for the show. And do it for us. And toast, dude. Cheers.
Hey, cheers.
A little nipple? Tipple?
Fantastic. Love that vanilla.
Well, vanilla and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Is there peat in this?
No. No peat. No,
but you got a little bit of smoke, though.
There's a little smokiness. It's probably just from the oak.
From the oak.
Yeah. Boy, it's good.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Hey, listen, music in this episode from Evans Blue, Thousand Foot Crutch, This Mortal Coil, Thomas Newman, and Michael Giacchino. I'm about to play about 28 minutes worth of clips from the last few years, about last three or four years.
Wow.
So it's a long one. This show is not near over. A lot of clips, some stuff. A lot of the stuff that basically what I did was I took all the end recap show stuff. I mean, every time I did a show at the end of the year and I play all the clips, I just kind of seamed them together and I thought it was fun to go back and listen to that stuff if you haven't heard it in a while. If you like any of the music that you're going to hear here, definitely, if you like it, you want to buy it, go to the website, mylifeisafoodie.com. We've got links there. You can buy this stuff. Listen, you guys, keep in touch, okay? Subscribe to YouTube, our channel on YouTube. Join the Facebook group. That is not going anywhere, and it's getting big.
Yeah, I mean, it's growing.
Joshua recently was making sauce and was going back and forth with Don Westmoreland and Dave Lieberman. They were just coaching him through it.
That's awesome.
And he goes, "How's the wine? Did I buy the right wine?" And it was this, and I thought, "This is great, man.
That's the way it should
this
be.
Huge thread. This guy's cooking, and these guys are helping him out."
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so proud, man. I'm proud of this.
Wonderful thing. You should be, man. Cheers to you.
It's here. Cheers, yeah. Man. Thank
Cheers
you.
To you. You've put a great show together. You've Thanks. Had a lot of people help out and have a lot of fun, but you know, this wouldn't have happened without you.
So but it's a community. Cheers to you. It's a Absolutely. Community. It's not me. It's us. Yeah, and it always will be us, okay? All right, listen. You guys can subscribe to everything on the site. Just go to mylifeasafoodie.com. Check it all out. And we will be posting everything we do. Will be posted to mylifeasafoodie.com as well as the YouTube channel, so you can keep in touch with us there. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Good night, Gracie.
Good night.
And according to this proposed act, even if you don't sell directly to consumers, they're still going to show you up to your farm whenever they want, put a flashlight up your ass, and check you out and tell you what to do. Now listen, I don't say this all that often. I try not to curse on the show, but what the f***? Dude, what was that? What'd you bleep me for? You don't have to bleep me, dude. I'm on a podcast. It's a podcast. I can say that word. Seriously, you're killing me over here. Anyway, at what point are we going to stop being governed? I mean, you want to talk about food safety. You're looking at the wrong group of people. Now take a look up the FDA's ass. They're not inspecting 10% of the food coming into our country from other sources. And that's the food that's getting people sick. It's rotten, disease, laced with poop. Thank you, Pantscast.
I've been to a bar in Spain and had breakfast. And the guy, you know, you ask, you know, what you're having like the little cheese toasties for breakfast. The guy's pulling them out. You know, he touches the money. He grabs the food. He puts it in the grill. He makes a breakfast for you. They don't. It's not like it's a big thing. It's not a problem. I mean, we just everything's overblown over here so bad to the point where we try to just. Take every germ, make everything right. You know, go for it. So what if you get a little sick?
So you can't deny that shit in food makes you sick.
It's part of it, yeah, but it's part of life. It's just the way it is. I mean, if you try to defend yourself against everything, you're not going to live.
So you think it's the fact that we're weak?
Yeah. We're a bunch of fucking pussies. How's that? You know what?
I'm a horror movie whore, all right? So it really makes me laugh. Every time he comes on, this is what I hear. I hear this dude. He, no matter what he says.
Little bit of the sweet potatoes.
You know, I he sounds like this dude.
They leave their coffins at night.
Come on, man. He sounds just like that dude. I love that.
Having pipes jammed down your throat and food pumped directly into your stomach repeatedly so that you felt as if you might explode.
Oh, dude, listen, I felt that the other night at Bazaar. Like they were sticking a pipe down my throat and feeding me until I might explode. But I'll tell you what, I'd have died happy, just like the geese.
This is what young ducks and geese endure every day solely to satisfy the demand for foie gras.
Hey, I'll tell you something. I may have grown up with foie gras liver. You know how much pasta I was forced to eat as a kid? I mean, if you're a kid in an Italian home for dinner, you're hosed. I mean, I hope you haven't eaten all day. Because the mountain of pasta that they're going to pile in front of you and force feed you with would choke a moose. And I wonder what Roger Moore's wife did to him to make him do this. I mean, look at this. This is James Bond. The guy used to ski downhill, shooting machine guns, drinking martinis, sleeping with European broads three at a time. Now he's defending ducks and geese for a bunch of tofu-eating liberals? Okay. Yeah, you're not pussy-whipped. If you could have one classic horror movie figure to your house for dinner, who would it be?
Frankie, Mr. Frankenstein.
I just had him for dinner at the beginning of the show.
Did you?
Yeah, and listen, let me tell you, it was no picnic.
No, he is such a dove. If you ever played, like, Parcheesi with him, get the board games out. He is so good at Twister.
So, I'm going to dry cure the sausage, but when it's done, if I haven't screwed the whole thing up, it should be botulism-free. But because I don't want to take the risk myself, I thought maybe I could send some to you, and you can try it. You know, be my guinea pig. That way, if it kills you, I know I shouldn't eat it, and you'll come back to life anyway. How does that sound? You up for that?
Oh, yes. So, I do food testing. I mean, it's I dive for a living, so anytime anyone wants to test some crap out on me, like, they just sent me this thing called swine flu vaccination, and I just recently injected it. I feel fine. Send me all of your pork products. I will test them first.
But no, I think it was my infatuation, not only with Julia Child, but the Galloping Gourmet, that turned my mother off to the idea. Graham Kerr was his name. That dude used to drink a whole bottle of wine, he'd get hammered on his show. He would just get blitzed. And she said, you know, you're a young boy, you should be out playing sports. Which I did, by the way. But gourmet, that was out of the question. And galloping was out of the question. Now, in the town where I was growing up, you put galloping and gourmet together, and that's an express train to an ass-kicking. It was a tough town where I grew up. Neighborhood beatings were handed out daily. I got those, too. So, an 8-year-old galloping gourmet for a son probably would have made my mother's already tough life a little bit tougher. I could not tell you that this wasn't chicken. If I ate it blindly, I couldn't tell you I wasn't eating chicken. I don't know why people bother eating alligator, raising them and eating them, when we have so many chickens walking around. We'd eat those. What kind of work goes into raising and killing an alligator? And it's dangerous. I mean, something that would love to eat you, to eat your lower torso and play with your dead corpse like a rag doll. Just eat a freaking chicken. It's less work, tastes great. 2 days before Christmas, I discover this blog written by this gal, Joe. It's called My Last Bite, mylastbite.com. Anyway, she has this post on molecular gastronomy. Anyway, she writes how it's her new addiction after having taken a class on molecular gastronomy in November at Sur La Table here in L.A. Why didn't I know about this? I want to do this. A chemistry set in my kitchen? I mean, that's better than power tools. In any event, I love her blog, because after that, I just started reading it. I'm like, man, I really like how she writes. I mean, it's my kind of foodie journalism and photography. And she makes it look simple. And if you can make it look simple, then that takes talent. Because I know it's not simple. None of this is simple. So I comment on her blog, and she's like my favorite person in the world right now. And I'm going to do this. So she emails me. She's excited for me. She says she's going to send me a video from Jose Andres making these spheres. And if I'd like to see it, she can make a DVD for me. Just unreal. I'm a total stranger. She's excited that I'm getting into this. Just a real sweet person. So it really takes me by surprise when people show that kind of kindness. I mean, I've met some really incredibly kind and giving people on the internet, especially through podcasting. But she takes the cake. Okay, Nathan from Phoenix, he wrote in, Yo, Phil, before these PETA nuts and animal activists start complaining about elephants being forced to dance and perform tricks at the circus, they should really think about the poor elephants roaming the plains of Africa bored shitless because they've got nothing to do.
Just a heads up that a lot of people who care about animal rights really care about cute animal rights.
Yeah, it's true, because catfish are pretty ugly.
Absolutely.
So if you're at the bottom of the food chain, it's no big deal.
Right, people don't seem to care about it nearly as much.
I think people would rather think that we have farms where pork chops walk around. They don't want to face the fact that cute little piggy got snuffed out in order to produce that nice pork chop or bratwurst that people enjoy so much.
Exactly right.
And at the risk of sounding sexist, which I'm not.
Sure. This is a good way to start any sentence, by the way.
How's that segue? Some of you are going to ask me this question. I'll go ahead and tell you no. About the next day. The answer is yes. Right? I think what I told Katrina is it felt like Casper the Unfriendly Ghost Pepper was f***ing me in the ass.
McMullen says it all started when she tried to return a snack wrap. She says it was cold and that the female employee would only give her a cheeseburger.
No, ma'am, I didn't ask for that, and that ain't what I paid for. But I didn't, and just how I'm coming to you and talking to you, how I'm telling you, this is exactly how I came to her.
When are we going to start pointing out that it's asked, not axed? Stop sounding like a dumbass and stop eating McDonald's. Okay, Dan from Baltimore writes, hey, Phil, I know you've got a real hard-on for fast food restaurants like McDonald's and Burger King, so I'm going to tell you something. I'm really fed up with the counter jockeys that work at these places who keep telling me sorry about your weight. Who the hell are these people to point this out? Don't they know I have feelings, or do they think because I'm fat I have thick skin?
It's like, I can compete with fast food, meaning, you know, a burger is a buck. But that's not even a burger, it's mostly just filling stuff. But I can get you a big bag of barley.
for $1.69 with homemade stock, which cost me nothing because I already got stuff in my fridge.
Nathan, you bring the barley, I'll bring the hops. We'll be in business, buddy.
That, my friend, is a different show. You know, with that, I'm just talking about beer. That's Americana.
You know, you've got a great set, a great crew. The lighting and photography is great. And you're so comfortable in front of the camera.
Well, thanks. The thing about being comfortable in front of the camera, like I've done, this is back in college and a little bit out here in Los Angeles, I've done theater only because I'm the youngest of three boys and I love attention. I'm old enough. I'm a grown-ass man, so I can say that.
The places that I like to hang out, there's this particular area in Burbank where I can act out like my entire fantasy life. There's an Olive Garden, an Outback Steakhouse, and a Krispy Kreme Donuts.
Cheese biscuits? Krispy Kreme Donuts? You've seen this chick. Does it look like she's eating cheese biscuits and donuts? I mean, maybe she is, but she's having her finger for dessert afterward. And I'm sorry. I'm just saying it. Unless she's got the metabolism of a rabbit, she's not eating that stuff. At least not all the time. I mean, those restaurants make people fat. And listen, she's batshit crazy, too. I mean, she's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Every time you read an article about her, she's saying some weird crap about how she figures she'll die young and tragic, and how Brian Austin Green, who she's dating, how he gets on her nerves, to the point where sometimes she thinks if she had a gun, she'd shoot him in the leg. Dude, if I was dating some girl, I don't care how hot she is, if she said that crap in an interview, I'm leaving freaking tracks, kid. Run, dude. That is a red flag. She goes, are you still watching Food Network? And I said, of course. And she said, have you seen A Crook's Tour? And I said, no, I haven't seen A Crook's Tour. And she goes, the guy, the host,
yeah,
he reminds me of you. He's sarcastic and negative.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gee, thanks, bitch. What the fuck was that supposed to mean? All right, now we're going to take one shot of this tequila and toss that in the pan. Crank up the flame now here, all right? Get the stuff bubbling. Burn that alcohol off. Now, while that's happening, we're going to take another shot here. And we're going to drink it. Cheers. Listen, this is not a kid's show. And here's the other thing. People call me all the time. They'll email me and say, my kid loves your show. And I'll go, oh, great. Then I'll think, oh, shit. You know? Because there's a lot of content.
Sure.
Gee, wasn't I talking about eating last week? You know, it was ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so funny. I, but this might be one you might want to have the kids sit out.
Right. Well, it's like watching No Reservations and Kitchen Nightmares in Brazil. None of it's bleeped out.
Is that true?
It's all raw.
True. So, what, is it okay to curse on TV over there?
There's soft porn after 11 p.m.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Well, there's soft porn after 11 p.m. here on Cinemax.
But no, this is network TV.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, just common cable, dude.
Dude, you gotta be kidding me.
Oh, serious. Every night.
Punch my ticket.
Let me get that visa.
Wow.
Yeah, really. No, it's just kind of goes along with the culture down there.
Okay, Connie from Branson, Missouri wrote to us, I've been a strict vegetarian for moral reasons for the last 20 years. However, I've recently gotten a serious craving for Kentucky Fried Chicken. Would it be ethical for me to eat a chicken leg if, for example, the chicken lost its leg in a chicken fight or through other natural causes? What do you think about this? Okay, so you had started telling me about this, and then we got a little off track, and then I heard some of this story from somebody else, and I thought it was a rumor. Did you tell me that for a while there, whenever you would travel to North Carolina on business, that you and your business partner would stop off at Paula Deen's restaurant?
We did.
Okay, because I thought you guys were joking about going there.
Oh, serious. Every night.
Every night?
That's good. It's really cheap.
Dude, I know, but it's Paula Deen, man. I can't believe this. Why eat there of all places? I mean, did the fact that she likes to deep fry butter, did that attract you there?
No, it didn't. Because I had a lot of other things that kind of drew me that way. But
you secretly love her food?
No.
You secretly love the Food Network?
No.
There wasn't any other place open?
No.
Dude, what is it? Do you find her attractive?
Uh-huh.
Seriously?
Sure.
I can't believe that you ate that crap that she cooks.
Fast food is good food. It really is. There's a reason why we love it, because it tastes good.
So that story I heard was true. You went there, you ordered the fried butter sandwich, you asked her for her autograph, and then she asked you back to your place and you guys made dinner together.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it came out great.
Dude, you are one twisted bastard.
Fuck you.
What?
Fuck you. Wow.
Oh, come on, man. You tap that big fat Kentucky Fried ass, didn't
you? Oh, yeah, baby. Smack, smack. That's unbelievable. You can basically have anybody say anything you want.
Listen, oh my God. Let this be a lesson to anybody who wants to come on My Life.
That's
with
right.
Me.
Yeah. Your nothing audio, is sacred.
Your audio belongs to me.
That's right. You're mine, bitch.
We had another conversation. You wouldn't want to hear this one.
Oh, no. Please. Oh, boy.
Paula Deen, huh?
Yeah, yeah, baby.
Hey, y'all.
Bring it on, y'all. Yeah, y'all, y'all, y'all.
I think people that are aware of animals are aware because of the emotional connection.
Right.
And I think with fish, it's different. And so you're less, I think many people are less connected with fish as an emotional attachment. But I think when you begin to learn about what's happening to our ocean, then it becomes more emotional. You know, when you start to learn about that, I think then it becomes more of an emotional issue, for sure.
Right, because nobody has a pet monkfish named Frank that they cuddle with every night.
Yeah, exactly.
Certainly, and more to the point, I feel that chefs and rock stars are kind of the same because they both get laid a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's it's a big reason to get into the business.
Yeah, now you're talking. Yeah. Sure, it's like, you know, the thing is, people think to themselves, well, drinking made easy doesn't make any sense. I mean,
right.
I open a beer, I drink it.
Right.
What's so tough about it?
Right.
Well, analyzing it
right.
is a completely different story.
Right.
You know,
appreciating it, too.
Sure, because drinking or alcohol, it's a lot like sex, right? Think about it.
Not if you're doing it right.
Yeah, well, yeah. But they don't have a show called Fucking Made Easy.
Okay.
You know? Because anyone can do it. It's pretty easy. Dogs
right.
can do it
That's
without
true.
Even trying.
You're right. You're right. The drinking part is certainly not the difficult part.
Right.
You're right. It's knowing how to be really good in bed or how to know what it is that you're drinking so that you can... I mean, what are you going to do? Impress your friends? I mean, it's sort of the problem with drinking is that... The more that you know, you run the risk of your standards increasing. I guess it's the same as sex.
Yeah, you're like the Dr. Ruth of beer.
Yes, thank
See?
You. That's the first.
All right.
You're on death row. Warden is turning on the juice at midnight. You can have anything you want. What are you having as your last meal?
What am I? I'm having pizza and a Caesar salad and a banana split for dessert.
Okay, nice. That's your last meal.
That's my last meal. There's nothing better than pizza and salad together. I love it.
What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? Probably a non-alcoholic beer. Probably a St. Pauli's Girl non-alcoholic beer. I really love that.
Peggy, you're about to die.
You think I'm going to go ahead and drink some real alcohol? I don't know. And I don't want to be throwing up right before I die.
It's like, you know, I'll have a Sprite. You know what? Better make it a diet Sprite. I'm on a diet.
Right? Maybe a real Coca-Cola instead of a Diet Coke.
Do you see that men taking over the duties in the kitchen is more of a power play in our favor because it tends to give us more of a responsibility in the house?
I do. I mean, I don't know if I do as a power play. I actually like cooking. I do most of the cooking, and my fiance is actually a great cook when she does. But I think I just I prefer doing it a bit more, and I think that a lot of guys are sort of discovering cooking, and it's sort of a role reversal. Look, I really don't think we should be putting women, you know, with the ball and chain back into the kitchen where, you know, they can't have careers. And their whole life revolves around the oven, the kids, and cleaning. Wait, actually, I guess that does sound kind of good. What was I saying?
She goes by McRunnerette, and looking at Emily Strunk-Helm pound the pavement, you never guess she's running on fast food.
I get my vitamin C from these shakes. Okay, then. Yeah, that happens. Could you imagine? On race day, it's Listen, I'm not being mean here. I hope she makes it. But fueled by McDonald's instead of a bowl of pasta or mashed potatoes, you know, a carbo load, or maybe some goo or power bars, I don't see good things, you know? 2 hours before the race, people are drinking sports drinks, kicking back energy bars. She's over there downing 2 McRib sandwiches, lactose milkshakes, onion rings. Absolute mess. Ha 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 ha!
You know, I mean, I could have just blown it out of the water, and you just feel sick, and that's just a disservice. You right. know, I mean, people do throw up at the French Laundry, you know, because they just overeat. You know, and so even to have the right portions.
I thought they threw up when the check came.
If you want to raise them as food, fine. Raise them as food. It's like these pigs. They got these show pigs in the, at the fair. They show. I don't know what it's about. I don't know. Look at my pig. Why? What did you do exactly? You raised a pig. Ooh, congratulations. What happens next? If Wilbur didn't do really well at the state fair, is he going to be bacon next week? More bullshit. I think animals are food, and we're at the top of the food chain, so we eat them. I don't like horses. No offense to anybody who loves horses. I'm sure they're smart as a whip. I just haven't had good experience with them. The only other movie I ever saw that had a horse in it that caught my attention was a porn that I watched in college, and it made me want to vomit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Enough. And leave it covered at room temperature. We don't want to put this in the fridge because we're going to have to take it out later, and we're going to waste time while it comes back up to room temperature. You know the rule around here. We do not cook cold meat. We like our meat warm when we stick it in. Yeah. You talking? So here's this little douchebag cutting the shit out of this perfect rib section. I mean, he's slaughtering this thing into pieces. You could never even serve this. Even at home, I wouldn't serve this. If you were making sausage with it, I don't think it'd be a problem. But when you're preparing chops, loin, ribs, tenderloin for service, it's got to look not just good, but great. And this girl, she needs a nice tenderloin, and Michael Myers over here is hacking this pig into pieces so unevenly. You'd swear he was cutting this whole thing blindfolded. Yeah, now, you see all that nice black stuff at the bottom? That's good shit. That's called the fawn. Not the fawn, not the fawns. Hey, that's good shit over there. All that black crap that's mixed in with the fat from the chicken, that's the base of your sauce, and your vegetables are going to pick that up right now. Well, that's cooking for a minute. I want you to come over here. I'm going to open that beer I told you to buy. In a measuring cup, I want you to pour 8 ounces. In another glass, I want you to pour the rest of that beer. Now that's for you. God bless the cook. Now drink. Cheers. All right, now let's deglaze this bitch with this beer. Hell yeah, smell that. Oh, fuck me, I want to go swimming. Nathan, thank you, brother.
Always a pleasure, Phil. Until next time.
Hey, we got to get together sometime. Play some hoops, man.
Play some hoops or eat some bacon.
Or that, yeah. I'll come down there and steal your lunch money. I don't know about you, but a life without French fries, coffee, and charred steak? That's a life I don't feel like living. These litigators hate life. And the worst thing about these propositions is that, you know, soon we're not going to want to live anymore. But we can't put a gun in our mouth because they banned the sale of bullets. It's like living in a rat maze that you can't get out of.
A heavily occupied neighborhood by Mexican Americans. And we've come to a stop, and we're not going to a pawn shop, are we?
Yeah.
This is a pawn shop here.
We're buying guns.
What?
We're buying guns.
Do I need a gun?
We need that first. We're getting a gun and then we're going to go eat.
Where the f*** are you taking me?
I ain't telling you. Figured out by now.
My philosophy is 70% store-bought ready-made plus 30%. Oh, shit! Go again.
Dude, you hear that voice? You hear the inflection in her voice? Stone cold bitch. Imagine, when she doesn't get her way, oh man, how evil. That's the voice you hear.
Go again.
Went shopping, forgot the vodka?
Oh, shit! Go again.
Better get moving, dude.
Air that one.
Doing the show has been kind of therapeutic for me. But after a while, I found it hard sometimes to find it within myself to talk about food, chefs, restaurants, news, happenings, beer, anything. Because, quite frankly, my only thoughts have really been with Katrina. She's been incredibly brave. She's taken a fight to this fucking cancer like you've never seen anyone take it. And everyone around us has said how proud they are of her. And I've been in awe watching her win this battle. Now, it's not over, and it won't be over for a long time, but we have the upper hand right now. And in our family, we've had quite a cancer year, and not all results have been like Katrina's. Living with cancer is a mystery, really. You never know when it's going to decide to pick another fight. It's like those sneaky insurgents, you know, it comes without knowing.
you know, it never announces itself, and all of a sudden there's an IED. Cancer, basically, is a big pussy. That's why you see kids getting leukemia. It figures, hey, it's just a kid. I'll pick a fight with it. Easy pickings. Yeah, right. I've seen more than my fair share of heroes during chemotherapy and radiation. People are not laying down for cancer, especially not us. And I've said, sitting in a room full of people, mostly women, getting chemotherapy treatments and swimming in their positive attitudes, it makes you realize that there are some very strong people out there who aren't going to take shit off of cancer. Cancer beats people every day, but you have to know this. It gets its ass kicked a lot more than you might think. It is beatable, and it takes positive energy to do that. Katrina's strength and positive attitude through all of this has been inspiring for everybody. You know, people ask her all the time how she's doing, and she says, well, look at it this way. I've been poisoned, mutilated, and burned. Considering all that, I'm doing pretty good. Just a great great outlook.
Let the sparks fly.
Far away, and I'm not gonna leave you.